It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel. Dan Morin joins us from MacWorld.com along with Andy, Alex, and Renee. There is the first word of a Haswell-based MacBook Pro. We'll talk about that. A slew of new announcements. An army from Apple this fall, perhaps, according to a secret meeting with Tim Cook. All that and more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 358, recorded July 9th, 2013. First, Kamchatka, then victory. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK7. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh needs, your Apple needs in general. We've got another massive panel. We had so much fun last time because, well, this is our thinking. If there's no news, just have a lot of people on the panel. And in fact, a little later on, I'm going to make each and every, each and every one of you make up a story to fill out the show. Let's start with our newest panelist from MacWorld.com, Senior Editor Dan Morin. Great to have you, Dan.
Great to be here, Leo. Thanks for
where,
having me.
Where are you located? Wait a minute. Let's guess. Okay, everybody guess where Dan is located.
If you would like to look at my background.
Are there any clues in the background?
Well, my apartment is reasonably sized. This is just the office.
Okay, so he's not in New York.
Manhattan. Yeah.
Manhattan's out.
Is he sweating?
He's not sweating, but he's wearing a T-shirt, and he seems to have removed his hair.
Yeah, just to cool off a little
bit. He has a Fight Club poster, but it's odd because it doesn't have any of the... It doesn't look like it has Brad Pitt in it.
I'm going for Mos Eisley.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. You think he's where?
Mos Eisley. It's my best.
He's in a cantina.
He's in a cantina in Mos Eisley. All right, Dan, where are you? I'm going to flip over all the cards.
I am in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is just outside of Boston.
Yeah. There you go. Would not have guessed that, but very close to where Andy is located.
Yes, indeed. I've seen Andy from time to time socially.
Wow.
Indeed.
Wow. Andy Anatko's here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Andy and his flip-flop squirrel.
Yeah,
it's one bush squirrel.
I was in the public garden on Saturday, and you just saw. I'm not joking. Like at least a half a dozen squirrels just like splayed on the ground underneath a tree, or splayed on top of a root. It was like as if they're saying, "It's just too hot for me to scamper."
I cannot believe I have fur.
That's right.
No more scampering.
Which is unusual for a prey species, but it was okay because even the dogs were saying, "Look, it's too hot for me to be a dog." Can we just consider that? Let's just say that I chased you. You ran away.
Punched the time clock.
We'll pick it up again next week.
I'm moving to Canada.
Yeah,
that's Alex Lindsay, who is back in studio with us again. And it's nice to have you 2 weeks in a row. I can't understand it. I don't believe it.
Did you like my little classroom in Rwanda?
That was amazing. Oh, you were. That's right. You were in. Good Lord, now I'm really disjointed. So 2 weeks ago you were here, a week ago you were in Rwanda, now you're back again.
Yes.
That was fast.
It was. In fact, that wasn't the only places that I was.
Yeah, I know. That Rwanda was very, very cool.
We're really excited. Really neat. That's the first lab. We have a second one coming in this month, and so we'll have another, 40 IMAX
does that work? Is it a paying school? Are you subsidized?
The government is underwriting all the equipment costs. So we pay for the development, and the government is paying for any staff costs directly. So they don't pay us for it. They just hire we tell them, you need to hire these people, and they hire them. And so it's a partnership between...
it's in their interest, obviously.
Well, Rwanda has built fiber through the entire country. Right. I had a dinner with the minister of... Youth and ICT, and they were like, "Well, we built all these highways
slowly, because otherwise it sounds like you're euthanizing IT."
Oh, the minister of youth and ICT,
youth and ICT. ICT.
So
much
it's
better.
It's really looking at how the younger population is going to use the internet in Rwanda, and they're very, very, very focused.
I think it's forward thinking. A lot of countries want to do this, where they realize they can jump, they can literally leapfrog industrialization and go right to the information.
Well, and what happened was that when Kagame took over, and Kagame is really the Steve Jobs of Africa. I mean, he's got this little...
He's the president?
He's the president. And when he took over, he brought in all of these specialists. So these economists and from the West and from all over the world,
right.
From the World Bank, from the IFC.
And Rwanda had prior to him been through a horrific...
He was the revolutionary leader that ended the genocide.
Yeah.
So he's the one that actually ended it.
Yeah.
And then started, running. And of course, it was very chaotic and very difficult.
Is he democratically elected? Or
yes,
yeah, that's
and
great.
So 92% approval.
He won.
Like it's so you when he starts speaking, anytime he shows up on the TV at a hotel or anything else, everyone just stops and just stares at the TV until he's done, and then they all go back to it. Not because they have to, just because they want to know what he's going to say next. You know,
that's exciting. For a country to have a leader like that.
Yeah, and he's extremely extremely focused. But he brought all these economists in, and so one of the things that they pointed out was, you don't have a lot of natural resources. I mean, you have some natural gas.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
You're a landlocked country.
Right.
Agriculture, the problems that Rwanda had was largely connected to overpopulation, because they're the densest population in Africa and one of the densest in the world. So how do you get out of that? And so they said, information technology is one of the ways to do that. And so what they've done is they've invested massively in fiber, and so they've got fiber loops going all through the country. They're bringing more and more fiber from the, they're still getting it all working, but the issue they have is they've built this huge pipe to get data around, but they don't have anything to put in the pipe. So that's what our job is, to train lots of people to generate content and build videos and training. And it's a great
opportunity for you and for the country.
Oh yeah,
right?
Well we're it's a huge opportunity for both. I mean, we see it as an investment. We're not this isn't an outreach or I mean it is. I mean it's an outreach, but we really look at it as an investment.
People who don't know you or may not know that this is you've been very interested in Africa for a decade.
Yeah.
And have done other development projects there as well. Same idea.
Yeah.
And this has really been a focus of yours. And I think one of the things that you told me is that the movie industry is looking at places that they can go and get this work done, the CGI work done and so forth.
Yeah, and I think
all around the world in different time zones, and that's a real opportunity.
It is, and I think that for Rwanda, I think that they will be generating, everyone that we train will mostly be handling local demand for the next decade.
Really?
There's just, because there's so much growth going on.
That's exciting. There's work there too.
I mean, while we think that they will be doing some work that's from, all over the world, we think that the vast majority of it is going to be stuff that is needed in the country. So
That's awesome.
It's exciting to be there. Every time you're there, it's exciting because there's just so much happening, and there's buildings being built everywhere. And it's the ninth fastest growing country in the world. I mean, they're it'll probably be in the top five next year. So
also with us, I should say hi to Renee Ritchie from imore.com. Good to see you, Renee. Sorry to be at the end of that tail end of that introduction. We had half an hour later, and there's Renee Ritchie.
And I've gone nowhere and done nothing. I feel about myself now.
You're keeping pretty busy. We've seen a lot of you. In fact, Renee's in Montreal right now. But
absolutely. Yeah, and we to make Alex feel better, we have a heat wave here too. So there's no solace to be found even in Canada right
now. Nowhere is it cool.
It's flooding. We've got Calgary flooded and Toronto flooded.
But a heat wave in Montreal is like it's not snowing right now.
Yeah. But the water melts and then it rises up and we're swimming everywhere.
Oh, no.
It's
just,
which is great for your Fitbit.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all wearing, by the way, we compared. Are you wearing one too, Renee?
I have a Nike Fuel lying across the desk over there because it was hitting my keyboard when I was typing, so I took it off.
It does you a lot of good on that desk. It's really racking it up.
Well, if I was walking during the show, Leo would yell at me anyway.
The reason I'm interested, I got mine. I mean, I'm like the last person in the world to get one, but I got mine yesterday and I've started wearing. This is my fifth Fitbit. But the other four were the ones that you clip on your belt.
Right.
One's in Paris, one's in the San Diego Zoo, one's in my wash. And I never found the last one. I think I flushed it. So,
are they still walking? Can you track them?
It's funny. When I logged in, they said, oh, you're back. would you like to replace your Fitbit? I said, yes. I'm going to use it. But this one I don't think I'll lose as fast. It's also less water.
I think that shows a lack of sophistication on the Fitbit software, because the server should be programmed to say either you've just found your Fitbit, you've just replaced it, or someone has dug up your corpse and is hauling it to a place where it's about to be sold for parts.
Should we call the police?
Security issue there.
Yeah, but it does show me the calories I've consumed over the last 2 years, and it was very low for the last few months. Anyway, I'm glad to have you all on here. We do, you know, I said there was no news, but there's some news. For instance, happy birthday, App Store, 5th anniversary.
It's done okay.
Yeah.
You know.
And they are giving away some free stuff. I don't know who decided to give it away, but these are actually some very good Infinity Blade 2. There will be no Infinity Blade 3, by the way.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. I think they gave up, right?
Well, Infinity Blade Dungeon, right? They announced that
Dungeons is dead or no? What'd you say, Dan?
I don't know. I heard about when they demoed the Infinity Blade Dungeons, I remember, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like three iPads ago, they demoed it on iPad 3.
And then the team got let go, or I think something exchanged hands and the team got let go and it was being reassigned. And now I think it's been killed by some rogue gamer.
So it's less than infinite is what we're saying.
Finite Blade.
Finite Blade is a very different game.
It's mostly like a little knife that's made out of wood. Yeah.
The Epic Games shut down Impossible Studios. Yeah. The game is on hold until Epic can find somebody else to take over. That's the last we heard back in February.
It was such a good idea when they started.
It was so cool looking. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you can get its predecessor, which is still a darn fine game. That's free right now for one more day, I think. Super Brothers, that's a really interesting game. Have you played that, Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery?
That's a great game. That's one of my favorite games for iOS in the last several years.
Me too.
It's so atmospheric. The music is fantastic. I went and bought the soundtrack because it was so good. It's this beautiful, like, chiptune music.
What I like about it is different. I hate to see ports of existing games because it's like, well, come on, let's do something that's native to the iPad. And this looks so different and so interesting. Yeah.
It plays so intuitively, too, which is kind of the fun. Half the fun is sort of discovering what you're doing, and then that moment of realization when you solve one of those puzzles, like, oh, I get it. Because of these things I did before, I can, like, pinch this in this way, and this all comes together.
Yeah, it's native. It's iPad native, or iTouch native, anyway, because it is available for the iPhone as well. So that's free. A good one to go run out and get right now. Let's see what else is free. Where's My Water? Is that the one with the alligator?
Yeah, it's a Disney.
That's for kids. Badland, I haven't seen that one.
That one's also supposed to be pretty cool. I think it's a side-scroller, but has some gorgeous art, too, I think.
It's one of these, I've played a lot of these, where you're kind of, oh, God, you've got to get through an environment by using physics.
I believe that won an Apple Design Award.
It's pretty gorgeous looking.
This year, I think.
Downloading now. You might as well get them all, folks. They're free. Let's see what else. Tiny Wings. Oh, that's a great game. That's an older one.
I haven't played that one.
Oh, Tiny Wings. Oh, you would like Tiny
Wings.
I'm
very focused on my games.
You like tower defense.
I really like.
Big tower defense person.
Tiny Wings is nice because it's an indie. It's one guy basically putting the app together, and he did it for iPhone and iOS, and I made a second version with more little birds, and it's absolutely gorgeous, too.
There are some other freebies. Those are the games. But other freebies include Over, which allows you to put text over photos. I'm not sure I want to see a lot more of that, but okay. You can.
Right on the internet.
Tractor DJ, which is a very good DJ app. Day One, which is a journaling app. I think you, Andy, recommended that. Yeah. It's a great journaling app.
As a matter of fact, had you not mentioned it, that would be my pick of the week this week.
Except we won't mention it.
No. It's okay. Because it's a good idea to like write something every single day, but it's such a pain in the butt to do it. Day One just makes effortless. Even if it just nudges you to say, "How about you just say one sentence about how yesterday went or how today went?" Great. No, that's fine. We'll take care of it.
Yeah.
It's like the Fitbit in that it encourages you without doing much to actively encourage you. And then months later, when you just happen to look at, oh, wow, I actually have a really good timeline of all of the interesting things that I don't have a conscious thought of ever sitting down and writing about a hugely interesting day that I had. But now that I'm scrolling back to May 21st, it turns out, oh, isn't that interesting? Oh, I'm glad I wrote that down. I would have forgotten all about that. And it's free.
Also free, and you said you like this, Alex, Potluck's Over, which allows you also to put text and artwork over photos.
It's great. That's definitely you should definitely download that one.
I want this one. This looks better than the other one that you put text and stuff over stuff. So apparently there are two apps, competing apps.
We're putting things on top of other things.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a repeat of over. That's a different over. Yeah. Or is it the same over? Okay. And How to Cook Everything, which is one of my, I would say the Mark Bittman's, my favorite cooking app for the iPad and iPhone. And that one's nice because it's updating all the time for free. Yep. So well worth getting that for free now. And finally, I'm surprised this one's free. There it is. Mark Bittman's How to Cook Everything. Highly recommended. And then I'm surprised this is free. This is something everybody with kids should have, the Barefoot World Atlas. In fact, even if you don't have kids, you might want to have this. Just have it on your iPhone or your iPad to keep the kids busy. You know, if you run into kids, like there's somebody making noise in the coffee shop. Hey, kid, come here. Have you ever seen a kangaroo? How about a baby kangaroo?
The leading exports of Canada are bauxite, chromium, manganese.
Potash. Don't you forget our potash.
Potash. Hey, without potash, there would be no something.
Yeah. Canada is where bounty police come from.
Tractor DJ is $20 usually. So, you know, I mean, I just snag these all.
Oh, the Tractor DJ you have to get.
Yeah. $20.
Have to.
That this is all free, according to ABC News. The companies making their apps free are not being compensated by Apple for the loss of revenue. Yeah. So they're going to lose a week's paid sales. I guess it's going to go on for a week, but I wouldn't wait. I'll
make it up on volume.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the publicity they just got. We just talked about five apps. We mentioned them. You should get them. But certainly while they're free, now's the time to absolutely drag them, get them out.
They're worth every penny at this point.
Yeah. And so the fifth year, it's hard to believe it's been 5 years, but remember the iPhone came out in June 2007.
And we all complained that Apple was the only one developing apps. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, they said web apps were the way to go, apps. Right?
Yeah, so we were like, pretty sweet. We want our own apps. And
did anybody get the timeline, the Apple timeline? Did they mail it to anybody? Because I didn't get it.
My colleague Lex Friedman got one.
Well, I can pull it up from Tim. @Tim has posted it on Twitter. He's a tech reporter at the Financial Times. And no, where is it? Where's the poster? He's got a tweet of the poster without the image. That's nice. There we go. This isn't a physical poster you can hang on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you get the digital one in the same place where they're giving away the apps on the App Store. There's a milestones button, and you can sort of scroll through, like they did recently with the 10 years of the iTunes Store, where you can sort of go through, here are the big deals over the last 5 years in the App Store. But I think that's just, they print out a paper version.
So I'll have to print it out by hand since I'm not. But none of you got it either?
Nope.
God, I'm surprised. It's probably because of your association with me. Guilt by association.
You can print it next to your Simpsons poster, Leo.
I want a new Simpsons poster because I've completely redone my Springfield. I need a new one. Where is it, Dan? Is it on the App Store?
Yeah, it's on the App Store. If you hit up the App Store on the main page, they have that same place where you go and find all the free apps. There's like a separate section next to it that says milestones. It was one of those things that surprisingly kind of a crappy design job from them.
Yeah, maybe they rushed it out.
They're a little busy.
They rushed it out.
They're busy making apps free, guys. They just don't. They don't make themselves free. Someone's got to do that.
Celebrate with free apps.
Someone's ripping off
green
belt somewhere.
I wish they did more of these because remember when every single new product would come out with this incredibly cool art litho style poster associated with it. I mean, like this was, of course, back when they used to do Macworld Expo, but it's like every time I'd grab like six or seven of these, one of them you'd lose because that would be like the wrapper for the rest. But then you'd have like this cool rainbow iMac poster in your office for about 2 years.
So it was July 10th, 2008, the App Store launched with 62 countries with 500 apps.
Wow. Was it really July? I mean, because of the...
That was more than a year. Oh, but
and
the
Super
iPhone
Monkey
was announced in June, but didn't come out to September, remember, or something like
no,
that.
No, it was announced in January. No,
oh, that's right. It came out in June. You're right. That's when I waited in line.
I think it was timed with the 3G launch, right? The iPhone 3G.
But it was a year. Yeah, it was out for a year without any apps.
Yeah. Wow. That could be the title of my New biography, A Year Without Apps. 10 million apps downloaded within 4 days. 10 million apps downloaded in the first weekend.
Everyone thought
Super Monkey Ball was $10, Leo.
Sega's Super Monkey Ball. That sells something about the dearth of apps.
They made $3 million, though. I mean, people were willing to pay $10 for an app.
Yeah, apparently. $10. Yeah. Shazam topped 1.5 million downloads in September. By December, Facebook was the year's most downloaded app, 5 million downloads. 1 billion were topped a year later, April 4th, 2009. Doodle Jump launches on the App Store. And that was in April 6th. Real Racing in June, Sports Center in June, Jamie Oliver's 20-minute meals in October. Facebook and Paper Toss were the paper. Remember, that was free. That's why it was a big,
right,
stupid game, but I guess cool, I guess. Paper Toss, the year's top downloaded apps for 2009. 2010, Angry Birds launches in February.
That was a good month.
It was a good month. iPad goes on sale in April. Netflix on April 3rd, Time Magazine April 30th. These timelines actually useful because you can absolutely see the growth of the store. October 28th, 2010, Instagram is the app of the week. I remember that my first Instagram had profanity in it because I thought nobody was looking.
It's all downhill from there.
It was. And then I stupidly connected it to Twitter, so I tweeted profanity. It was a doubly profane sentence with three words in it, two of which were filthy. And
of course, no one's looking at it.
I got a teacher said, I cannot follow you if you continue with this profanity.
Bill Cosby was outraged.
Cosby was so upset.
But they were okay with a picture of your butt. It was just the words that people were upset with.
Kind of was a picture of my butt, actually. App Store downloads top 10 billion by January 2011. Paper Glider, the 10 billionth app downloaded. What a surprise.
Well, as you're going through all these...
There's a paper theme going on there.
Yeah.
As you're going through all these top like hit apps, how many of them went on the week of debut? Would you have said, you know, it's a app that takes normal looking pictures with a great camera and makes them look really, really crummy, and it's right. Yet another social media service. How many people would have guessed that it would become like?
I did. I knew when Sarah showed me Instagram, and it was within the first week of its release. I jumped on with both feet and both hands. I just thought this is the greatest thing ever. And you know, I agree with you, Annie, and you're a serious photographer. But you got to admit, I still look at Instagram, and I was a little worried that video would swamp the Instagram feed. I still see great images every single day on Instagram.
And anything that encourages people to take pictures is a good thing.
Yeah,
I was bringing that up just to sort of like poke fun at myself. That sometimes there are apps and there are hardware and software, all of us, that we look at and say, oh my God, this is the most wonderful thing ever. This is so different and so unique and does nothing. Right. And then something that you said, okay, here's yet another like Bluetooth flashlight SMS app.
Right.
That of the 19 that came out last week, it doesn't do anything new. It doesn't do anything particularly well. But there's something about it that causes, okay, so now 93 million people are using it. Guess I should review it now.
Yeah. No, I liked it right off the bat. I think because not only did it seem to foster photography, but it was a great way to stay in touch with people. And I still stay in touch with people. Because I follow their Instagram feed, I know what's going on with you, Andy, for instance, with a lot of people, with Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, who is apparently naked in his Instagram feed
today.
It's a great
public photo journal.
Hey, if you look like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
I would never wear no
clothes.
Nobody complains when people look like that.
Hey, number seven. Whoa. Yeah, you know, wow. He's been working out. And then, of course, what would we do without the brunch picks?
Yes.
Yep.
You know, I know what Julio has having for breakfast.
Go Julio.
It's just, you know, it's fun.
It's a way to publicly share a photo journal. It's just like your moments that you want
and
to share.
And where would
everybody.
I, Justine, be? By the way, your discovery, Alex Lindsay, at WordCamp Pittsburgh.
Yep. Yep.
When was that? We should do a timeline of a milestone of I, Justine.
Oh, it was, I know it was the fall, it probably would have been 2005, but it was the fall before the first Mac break. Or no, not the first, the second Mac Break. So it would have been 2006.
She was on Mac Break, and then we did a Mac Break weekly from the 21st Amendment Brew Pub upstairs. First time I met her.
Yeah.
Some beautiful woman was sitting with a BlackBerry, by the way, tweeting away or something.
Well, and
I was baffled. Why is there a beautiful woman here? Because this is not normally
she doesn't fit in
a hangout for beautiful women. Well, I'm just saying.
And it was like the, I think the second, because the first Mac Break we did was with Emery and Amber and you and I. You know where
the
first video one
was at Macworld Expo. Right?
Macworld Expo, and then the second year I asked Justine, and she was still in Pittsburgh, and I asked her if she'd come out, and it was funny because somehow, of course, she shows up to cover locations for us for Mac Break, and she ends up on ABC News. I mean, it was over. But she just, you could just
tell.
She just absorbed attention.
All right. Milestones, ladies and gentlemen, going back through time. Disney's Where's My Water was a 25th billion app downloaded. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not telling the producers how to run the show, but if you want to loop in like background music of Send in the Clowns, an instrumental version, it just sounds like
isn't it rich?
And then 2006, a little app called
Scribblebot
taught us how to learn and love and share scripts.
50 billion downloads May 16th. Remember when that clicked over? 50 billion downloads, more than $10 billion paid to developers, and Apple celebrates 5 years of the App Store. On July 10th, which is tomorrow.
It's a pretty incredible distribution of wealth.
$10 billion.
$10 billion.
And that's 70%. So Apple keeps 30%.
They're doing okay.
So they're doing all right. A couple billion there, that adds up.
Check every once in a while.
I do. There's always been that question. Does Apple make money on iTunes? Does Apple make money in the App Store? And the only reason it would not is because of the costs of providing the downloads.
I think they're definitely making money. I don't know
and
how much.
And the free apps. Subsidizing the free apps.
Yeah, for years they said that they were running just above break even. Right. I think that's changed more recently.
They haven't said much lately, have they, Dan?
Yeah, not so much.
I think they're making money that BlackBerry would love to see on their hardware end at this point.
They're making money. Ouch. BlackBerry would love to see, period. Yeah.
They're making BlackBerry money now, baby.
Probably any of their mobile competitors would love to see that money at this point.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Tim Cook has a secret meeting at Fort Mason Center. Shh. We had people in studio on Sunday. I swear we're here for that. They wouldn't tell me.
He's competing in BattleBots. Okay, there I said it.
Yes, you ruined the surprise. All right, we're going to take a break, though, and tell you where to get rid of your old stuff so that you can get the new stuff. There's always new stuff, and there will be soon new stuff from Apple. And I would suggest that even though we don't know when the new stuff's going to arrive, now's the time to get a free 30-day locked-in quote on your old stuff, just in case.
You should just do that. It's just like every month.
Every month, you should just get another quote.
Have a little alarm go off.
Because I can tell you one thing. Your iPhone 5, your iPhone 4, it's not gaining in value. You know, that you got to wait, 50 years, and then they'll be antiques. And then you could sell them on eBay for a lot of money. But right now, they're going down in value. So go to gazelle.com. By the way, break your phone, they still will buy broken iPhones because there's value in those for parts. So consider that. And if you've got a rim,
get rid of it.
It's officially
sell it now before everyone realizes that it's not going to work any longer.
And you don't have a table with a wobbly leg.
They buy HTC, they buy LG, they buy Motorola, Nokia phones, Samsung phones as well. You got an old Galaxy S3 that maybe you want to unload. A Galaxy Note 2, getting ready for a newer phone. This is your chance. I'm just curious what the iPhones hold their value really well. I'm just curious what an S3 is worth today. This is the S3 GT. I'm surprised. $165.
How much is the S2?
You think that's worth more?
I don't know, because I got to get rid of mine.
You got one.
Well, when I jumped on.
May I recommend a visit to gazelle.com?
After the show.
Find out what your phone is worth. They actually take more tablets than they used to now. They're using Samsung Nexus tablets, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface you can resell. Oh, he's doing the work for you. Look at that. Galaxy S2, that's not going to be worth much.
I know.
$60. $10. $10, no more than that. Let's see. Go ahead. $65.
You've been doing this a lot.
I got Gazelle in my head.
Yes.
So here's the deal. I want you to try it. Go to gazelle.com. Go through that drawer, that messy drawer every geek has. In some cases, it's larger than a drawer. some cases it's a closet, filing cabinet, small rental unit. Get that stuff, sell it, get cash fast. You can get a check, PayPal credit. Best thing, though, if you use Amazon, get the Amazon gift card. That bumps it up another 5%. Find out why more than 500,000 people have used Gazelle to make more than $100 million. That's how much they've paid out. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Don't bother trying to dust it every 3 months. Gazelle it!
I was trying to make a noise like a gazelle, but I have no idea what a gazelle
sounds
like.
What are you buying on
Woot? I just checked. You
said
Amazon.
That's not a good deal.
No, it's not a good deal. I didn't say I was going to buy it. But what happened was is that I have a tendency to look at Woot. And then you said Amazon. Amazon, of course, owns Woot. And then my head went to Woot. And then I turned Woot on. And
all right.
I just wanted to see what was Woot.
We should do this. I wish Woot would give us money to do this. Let's do our Woot check-in of the day. Wouldn't that be a great thing?
There should be. Like, let's
review
all the
Woots. This is a crappy deal, though. I don't understand why anybody would buy this.
My $399
for an Onkyo AV receiver.
See,
I have this one.
On the other hand, the men's ninja shoe looks pretty cool.
Men's ninja shoe. Even the name.
Look at that.
You never know that when you're wearing them until it's too late.
How do I find men's ninja shoes?
It's further down on the side. You can't just look at the main screen.
You can't see them, Leo. They're invisible.
Proper wooting requires a little sorting through.
The sport?
They only come in black, though.
There it is. Oh, sport woot.
Ooh, those look kind of nice.
Tech tabbies.
If you wear these into the studio.
Well, not the dumbest footwear I've seen this summer.
Well, it's better than the ones with toes.
I have my Vibers.
Would wear those in a
it does season. Have a disclaimer. Do not use these to conduct covert assassinations and sabotage against rival prefectures.
Well, you know why you don't? Because you have red on the bottom. You can't.
Oh, yeah. When you run away, yeah, they'll say.
You at night.
Oh, wait, but they do have a cleft toe, though? Is that so you can wear a sandal?
Yeah. No, see, that's the problem.
Why do you need to wear
problem.
A sandal? No, you're already wearing shoes.
It's not so you can wear a sandal. These, it's so you can get you can put the rope between the toes.
Oh, for the rope.
That's why these are so cheap,
so
because you'll be walking around with them, and then you get shot in the back of the head by a hunter who thought he was tracking a doe.
What are those 802.11
it's
AC,
a death
Leo? I'm not going to buy any 802.11 AC shoes anymore.
You're going all the way to 802.11D, huh?
Yes.
Here's the problem. They have two sizes.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Men's size 5 or 6. Well,
that's because we got here too late.
That's for children. I have small feet, and even I can't fit in those.
It was a result of poor wooting.
Poor wooting?
No, so, before, it just depends on what color you have.
Oh, is it the color the problem?
Oh, no, maybe not.
I don't think they make ninja shoes big
enough. It was all available the first time I clicked, and the second time I clicked, it was gone.
Well, you know what? You know who to blame?
Never mind.
Us. We just said a million wooters.
I know.
I'm telling you, Woot, you should advertise. Well, Woot has wine? I'm not sure I'd buy Woot wine.
No.
is it actually Woot brand wine?
Like a good example of
no, actually, it's from a good winery. It's a winery around here, Geyser Peak. It's actually a very good winery.
Hey, man, a cheap buzz is a cheap buzz. Don't put on airs.
It's sold out. $35 for a bottle of wine. I don't know if that's a cheap buzz. Professional rib grilling kit. Well, I could use that with my big green egg.
See?
Ruining all my picks of the week.
Oh, never mind. Forget we mentioned it.
Look, a little Sharp portable air conditioner.
Moving on. Tim Cook had a special super secret top double secret event at the Fort Mason Center, which is in San Francisco.
Evidently,
beautiful
place. It's not as secret as we wanted it to be.
Well, you know, if you bring Apple retail store leaders from around the world to San Francisco, you fly them in from all over the world,
yes,
and then you get together with them, inevitably one or two of them are not going to understand the rules and talk to the press the next.
Well, if you put up a giant tent, it's kind of noticeable, too.
The tent kind of was a giveaway, yeah.
Yeah.
He talked
especially
for 3 hours.
On the side.
I guess when you're employees, he can say, you sit there and you listen.
Yeah.
You're not moving. But see, here's the thing. Sunday, we had two guys from Apple. We had a guy from Geneva, a guy from Sydney. These were all Apple Store guys. Two guys from Toronto and two guys from London. Mm-hmm. And they were all Apple Store. And I said, were you here for the event? And they just, they didn't say anything.
No. Right.
Coincidence.
Yeah, we just happened
to
be in town.
Town.
And we didn't have anything to do on a Saturday. So we just happened to come up here.
Go ahead. Were they wearing suspiciously long sleeve shirts in the hot weather
to hide the tattoo?
So you couldn't see what they were wearing, on, let's say the wrist sort of forearm ish.
You know, they didn't have explosive collars though to prevent talking.
Should have checked them.
You should ask them what time it was.
Oh damn! What was I thinking?
Or get the metal detector wand out just so you can.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to go through a little strip search.
You don't mind a cavity search, do you?
It's a new TWIT policy.
It's a new TWIT policy. It was on page four of the 18-page waiver you signed.
We need to search you for non-FCC-approved devices. It's a federal thing.
No, no, no. But, well, here's what's kind of interesting. Cook said in the 3 hours that Macs and iPads are selling quite well, so let's put them on the back burner. One out of every four Macs sold across the globe are bought from Apple retail stores. Cook was happy about that. But he said 80% of all iPhones are purchased elsewhere. We want to change that. So stop pushing the Macs. Stop pushing the iPad. Somebody comes in and says, I'm looking to buy an iMac. You say, but how about this fine phone?
Well, so what got me about that is where is everybody buying? Are they buying, everybody buying through carriers?
I think
they're going to AT&T. They're going to Verizon. I would guess that's the case.
So I can tell you what my wife was trying to get a new iPhone because she's got this 4 and it's, you know, slow. And I keep on telling her she needs to get a new one. And
you know,
she went to get a 5.
Right?
No, she goes to the 5 and she goes to the Apple store. And then because she's part of the family plan, now she has to go to the AT&T store. Like Apple was sending her to the AT&T store. The AT&T store is in short. You know, like it was all this back and forth. She still has an iPhone 4. So, you know,
bummer.
And I just told her, just buy a Verizon phone and then you don't have to do anything. So if you already have something, if you already have a subscription, there are cases where it's actually easier to just go to the AT&T store or the Verizon store than it is to go to the Apple store. That's what Apple has to fix if they want people to buy them, because I always buy everything at the Apple store. And the reason is because I don't want to deal with having to fill out some stupid paper for my AppleCare. You know, if I buy it at the Apple store, it's just automatic. I just want AppleCare, and then it's attached to my account, and it's all done. If I do it at the AT&T store, I got to remember to send something in, which I never do, and then I don't have it.
Apple retail has a bigger footprint, but it's nothing compared to carrier footprints. There's carrier stores everywhere, and people who don't want to drive an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or just don't have an Apple store in their area probably have 3-4 AT&T stores, Verizon stores, Sprint stores within driving distance. And that just be so much more convenient for people to go there. And Apple, unless they expand greatly, is never going to compete with that.
Well, internationally especially, right? Because Apple's got presence in maybe a dozen, two dozen countries. But like there's tons of countries out there where there is an iPhone, but it's all done through the carriers. There is no Apple store too. So that's a lot harder for them to get into the channel there.
And there are a lot more other stores than there are Apple stores. He does point out though that when their phones break, half of them go back to the Apple store for repair or troubleshooting or replacement.
You definitely don't want to go to AT&T to have someone look at it.
Right. So, but that's not a good, ratio. 80% are bought 20% are bought at the Apple store, but 50% are repaired by the Apple store. He says he wants to get those numbers more in line. So he's developing incentives for both customers buying iPhones and the Apple store selling the phones. Apple's apparently back to school promotion is one of the first elements in this, with a $50 gift card if you are a student purchasing an iPhone. That's incentive, right? And they're doing that $100 credit for people buying a Mac, I think. According to this story, it's a 9-to-5 Mac. Although they're using an image from you, Renee. Were you down
there? There was a guy who was sitting there looking at Apple build a tent and tweeting me image after image. So Mark from 9-to-5 Mac did the reporting, and he's very classy. So he acknowledged that the guy was tweeting them in my general direction.
That's nice. He gave you both credit, Noble Brown and I don't see a tent here though.
There, if you click through Noble Brown's timeline, you go maybe like 3 or 4 tweets down, you'll see a whole ton of different pictures.
Cool, cool. Noble knew who to tweet. Yeah. So I missed Tim Cook walking on. Says Noble, he's tweeting you. That's pretty funny. Yeah. Let's look through these. I want to see the tent. Look at the buses. They busted these guys in. This is a nice place, actually. Oh, there's the tent. This is a nice place to have an event. Fort Mason Center, a lot of events there.
It's huge.
Here's the tent. Yeah, it's huge. It's a little rundown. It's a little rustic.
They have a farmer's market there, which I happen to have gone to at some point.
Yeah, there's a music. My kids went to music school there.
Really?
Yeah. There's a Blue Bear Music there. It was really great. There's the Golden Gate Bridge in the distance. That's a pretty picture. You can kind of see where it is. It's right on the bay. It's an old army. And there's Noble's shoes.
Not ninja shoes.
Apparently not. Purple, though. This is a vine, so it's just going to go again and again and again. All right. Anyway, back to the story. What else did Tim say? Because and now this is a quote from one attendee.
Yeah.
But it's the quote that it's kind of the quote everybody kind of mentions, and I think it's that Apple is going to launch, quote, an army of new products this fall.
That's a literal army, by the way.
Yeah, an army.
They're actually.
They're like minions.
Sweep over it.
They're going to be like minions, but with
not a battalion.
Apple
logos.
It's like that World War II map where Apple slowly encroaches across all of Europe.
It's risk. Yeah. It's basically
risk.
Yeah.
They're going to take the Kamchatka Peninsula, and it's all over from there.
We must have a Microsoft. Yeah.
First Malaysia, yeah, then the yeah. world.
And trap Google in a pinchers movement. Yeah.
What do you guys think about the low-cost iPhone rumor in multiple colors? We keep seeing pictures of backs and stuff.
I think it makes sense.
It makes sense. Especially overseas, it's the same. We forget about how expensive these things cost when they're not as heavily subsidized as they are in the U.S. market. And also how many sales Apple loses overseas simply by virtue of the fact that an Android phone that's running Android 2.3 costs next to nothing compared to. I mean, people would much rather have the extra equivalent of $150 in their pocket than have whatever the large advantages of an Apple piece of product in their pocket.
It also fixes several big problems for Apple. I mean, as far as I know, they've had this in the lab for years, but they've always chosen to keep last year's model at a lower price. But when you start putting an iPhone 5 at a lower price, and this started happening already with the 4S and the 4, that's a hugely attractive phone. And exactly what Andy said, people would rather save money up front than over the long term. So it actually reduces the amount of people who will consider the higher end model at the same time as higher end phones are reaching saturation, according to some market observers. And you have the emerging markets where they don't have the subsidy program. So the lower and it's not, people call it a cheap iPhone or budget. It's lower cost the way that a Mac Mini is to a Mac Pro or an iPad Mini is to an iPad. It's nothing cheap about it. It's just lower cost of entry. And that solves all those problems rather neatly for Apple. So it seems almost.
And if it's, certainly and if it's plastic on the back, I'd be tempted to get it so it doesn't break when you drop it.
Yeah. And better yeah. wireless.
Well, and that raises a question.
I should say that I did an inadvertent drop test over the weekend. At the same time when I was taking those pictures, I had a pouch on my pouch clipped to my bag.
I saw your pouch.
Exactly. It had five different phones in it because I was doing side-by-side camera tests. And then at the end of the day, I was hot too. And I'm just bending down to pick something up and sklump, all five just fell to the ground. I will say that there were five phones, three of which had plastic bodies, two of which had metal bodies. And as always happens, whenever I accidentally drop a phone, it was the metal-bodied phone whose screen broke and the rest of the
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I've dropped plenty of phones, always by accident. Some of them mine, some of them not mine. The only time I've ever broken a phone is when the case was metal. That's only an anecdotal piece of evidence, but
science.
After so many years, it's like maybe that's not just coincidence.
What would your theory be that the metal is?
I mean, it makes some sense to that it would transmit more of the shock to that would transmit shocks instead of absorbing it. I have so many plastic bodied phones where I will see that it actually landed right on the corner, and all it did was just sort of scuff the corner, and that was it. The glass was fine. Right. Everything else was fine.
The metal is malleable, right? The metal will dent and bend, whereas plastic will either shatter or not shatter most of the time.
Glass,
I mean, my iPhone 5 has a nice little divot on the bottom of it where I dropped it now. So, yeah,
that's
tough.
That's where all the damage is on my iPhone 5 is on the bezel, on the metal, the aluminum bezel.
And Apple has made plastic phones before. The 3G and the 3GS were both plastic phones. And they have this tendency when they introduce a higher-end product to have the lower-end ones be color, like the iPod Touches went color when the iPad Mini was introduced. So color makes – I don't know if it'll be iPhone 7 palette color, but colors make a lot of sense.
I think that styling is like not as important as anyone makes it out to be. Because again, I'm the guy on the subway who's always looking at what the other kind of devices that other people are using. And the times where I see any kind of a phone that is not inside an $8 third party case is so rare. So if they're
exactly,
so, I mean, anybody,
exactly,
and it's like the iPhone 5 is one of the most beautiful phones ever made, but. Again, it's beautiful for about 8 days until they get that box from Amazon with that $12 case. Silicon Hello Kitty slipcase.
And then you have battery. Really ugly phones like the Galaxy S4, which you're very happy to put in a case, right? And but at that point now, because of this case, not only is it going to be really robust, this is a Spigen slim armor.
That's a lot of case.
It's a lot of case. Yeah.
And it has the little peekaboo view thing, which I really like.
I mean, there are pluses and minuses. This is why I disagree with people who will always dismiss a plastic body. The nice thing about like the S3 and the S4 is that, yes, it has a plastic back, but the idea is that you can easily snap that off so you can replace a battery, swap out a memory card, or just replace essentially. And isn't it nice to have a phone where you don't have to simply slip the phone inside a case? You can actually buy a case that will become essentially part of that phone's housing.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is necessarily a positive or a negative to plastic, but there are positives as well as
that. Well, I kind of dig the color idea too. I mean, one of my colleagues got his iPhone 5 anodized, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so it's kind of, you think like, well, hey, that's kind of nifty looking. And for me, there's a question of trade-offs in terms of if we've got a lower cost iPhone that does have that slick sort of styling, what are the trade-offs going to be that aren't just going to convince people to flock to this cheaper phone, especially if it's got like, oh, I can pick what color I want. Like, I think there's a lot of attraction there. And I don't know what the trade-offs will be in terms of like the full cost versus the low cost phone that's going to move people in one direction or the other.
I think we can also say that we're kind of at the same stage. Well, we're much later, but it's similar or analogous to what happened to the iPod, right? Where they started to fill in the gaps with low-cost iPods, color iPods.
I think in the history, I mean, Apple's history has been not wanting to leave a lot of oxygen in this space. And so definitely with the iPod, they started with something very high-end, but we ended up with something from $50 to, to $600 or $500 or whatever. They had something at every step all the way up. And it definitely seems like that's something that's missing in the iPhone and iPad market.
Right.
Yeah, and also the plastics, I mean, the polycarbonate. People get angry when I call it plastic, but polycarbonate varies. Nokia makes really nice ones.
Wait, who gets angry when you call
it? The internet, Leo. The internet gets
I was pretty
angry.
Upset about
I'm sorry, that's not plastic. That's polycarbonate.
Yes. But, I mean, like, the BlackBerry Z10 in black feels great. In white, the plastic feels very different. I don't like it as much, and I found that with a lot of phones, that the color and the manufacture of the plastic really varies the quality.
White tends to be slick.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's something to do with the color or what, but they tend to be slick and slippery. And I guess you could do more textures and other colors. In fact, I'm even looking at these pictures from Tactus.com of the reputed iPhone, and the white one looks really slippery. You could just see it.
Well, the white and black iPhone 3GS were pretty similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's just that it looks like a bar of ivory soap. That's what's kind of getting it.
100% pure. 99 and 44 100% pure.
These I like the semi-transparent one.
Yeah, these
I like
really
the
look like
blue one. I would the Bondi blue is
very
hot.
Very iMac.
Yeah,
I got yelled at last week for mispronouncing Bondi, and I don't know how to pronounce it still. So I'm going to keep
you get yelled at a lot, Renee. I'm noticing
people
that.
Are
Twitter is very angry.
No, don't use Twitter. That's the place where yellers go. In fact, all the celebrities are leaving Twitter now because there was so much negativity.
A lot of haters.
A lot of haters.
Haters.
Haters. Bondi. How is it pronounced?
Bondi? Really? I thought that was the Japanese electronic.
Bondi. We always have we have so many Australians in here, and I never ask them. I should ask them. How do you say it? Bondi?
The Bondi. Right answer is you ask an American how to pronounce it, and that answer is the correct one. Bondi.
Ask an American. Yeah, that's always the right answer.
I was just trolling for conversation.
One of the best CBC shows ever, Andy. Ask an American.
and apparently we have no Australians in the chat room in an unheralded, unprecedented. Nobody, Bondi says Psych4. Bondi.
Do we want a Bondi iPhone?
It's a little retro for me.
Bondi Beach.
Now, if you talk Blue Dalmatian and Flower Power, then I'm in.
Hey, they are made in California now. Or, no, not made, but designed.
Assembled.
Yes.
They bleed in six colors.
Let's take a break. We got some news about the Haswell MacBook Pro. But first, a word from LegalZoom.com. You don't have to go to a lawyer for a lot of the legal documents you need to prepare in life. In fact, it'd be a mistake to go to a lawyer. When I created Twit, I created an LLC online, easily, going through a questionnaire at LegalZoom.com. And guess what? It cost me $99. That's a good deal. You can do a Chapter S or a Chapter C Corp for $99. Trademark, $169. Last will and testament, if you don't have one, boy, you got to get one. If you've got kids, you don't want the courts deciding where they go. $69.
You could say where your kids go, what happens to
your
assets.
And even if you decide that you're going to do it, at some point you're going to go to a lawyer, just get something in place. That's the big thing, is that for $69 you can have something.
Well, exactly, because I think...
When you're going to get around to
it. I'll go to a lawyer, and you never do. Just do this. You can literally do it tonight. Mm-hmm. You get home from work, do it, it'll be done, you'll be happy. And, by the way, this is something new at LegalZoom, and I love it. They do have legal plans at fixed rates for low monthly fee. You can speak to an attorney licensed in your state, almost every state now. They have reviews of the attorneys, profile of the attorneys, unedited reviews, so you can see which attorneys are, you know, fit your needs. That's great, too. That's real peace of mind. Very inexpensive. Personal legal plan attorney, $11.99 a month. That's a great deal. LegalZoom.com. As a thank you for mentioning Mac Break, if you use the offer code MBW on checkout, MBW on checkout will take $10 off. Whatever it is you need. They do a lot of stuff, not just the big ones that we've mentioned. If you look at LegalZoom.com at all, if you're doing a nonprofit, if you're doing if you want to do a DBA, get a tax ID, it's just a ton of stuff. Trademark registration might be something you'd want to look at if you've got a brand. What's your name of your blog? Is it something you want to protect? You don't want somebody to create a competing blog with the same name. This protects you. All sorts of business compliance and business services.
It's very important, especially if you have a popular podcasting organization that has a similar
name. We trademarked Twit so quickly.
And they still...
Well, this weekend I couldn't trademark.
No, but...
Because it was owned. But how about this? What happens to your pets if you pass? Did you ever think of that?
I never thought of that.
Pet protection agreement, $39, a personalized agreement that covers all current and future pets. Community of care provisions to preserve your pet's well-being, ability to provide instructions for pets' wants and needs. I think this is, there's a lot of people say, oh, I don't have kids, I don't have to worry. What about pets? What happens
I've
to
got
your
a
pets?
Plant.
I don't think they have plant protection, but I should.
That's all right. That plant is no way
to
so
species. Put it out into the sun.
You can have a pet guardian. You can leave funds for your pet. I mean, this is not insignificant. A lot of people don't think about this. And you know, Chad, you're a young guy, but you could pass at any time.
I know. I think about it all the time.
What happens to your kitties? You have a brother or sister? Somebody's going to come from Austin and get them?
Well, I mean, if it was up to the government, they'd probably be...
The government doesn't rule on pets.
I mean, I don't know. They might send them to a to
next
camp
on the docket. What happens to cuddles and
it would really
mittens.
Depend on
waffles
what kind of pet.
Waffles and Sella.
Waffles and what?
Sella.
Like it's celery?
She's named after a singer, Sella Blue.
Sella.
Yeah.
Next on the docket, State of California versus Waffles and Sella.
Sella? Where do we do? But they would they'd go to the pound.
They'd go to the pound is what they would.
You know, it's
they'd exactly what
I
they
would
do.
Not want that.
Pet protection.
Where are we going to send these weasels?
LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code. Hey, if you lose the offer code MBW, it's like $29 to protect your pets. That's a great deal. Just saying. LegalZoom.com. Your pets will thank you. You know, this happens all the time. When there's a new device, people get it to review it or whatever, and they go over to Geekbench. And the thing about Geekbench, when you use it, unless you explicitly say don't, it will upload the results so that there's a database of all the machines with this, you know, processor, these specs, these were the results. Well, a machine appearing to be a Haswell processor clocked at 2.4 gigahertz is now showing up at Geekbench. AAPL J45,1. It was spotted by Mac Rumors today. The test machine features 16 gigs of RAM, running Mavericks 10.9, further kind of...
Yes.
You know, supporting this. Obviously, a new Haswell. I think that's why they didn't release Haswell MacBooks Pros, right? They want to do it with Mavericks.
Right.
Yeah. It is not super fast. It's at a Geekbench score about 12.5 is fairly close to the 15-inch MacBook Pros. But that's kind of what we saw with the MacBook Airs. They didn't speed them up.
It's all about battery
power.
Life now.
Yeah, battery life. And... putting the SSD on the PCI bus made a big difference in the air. Huge difference. The one that Geekbench saw is an Intel Core i7-4950HQ. That's a fourth generation Core i7 with Iris 5200 graphics. That's the premium graphics solution as opposed to the Intel HD, which is also available on Haswell. So this was obviously like top of the line and still not much faster, which is interesting. Although one of the things that Geekbench wouldn't show is like lag as you're going back and forth in a Retina display, things like that.
Right.
Previously it was redlined, and hopefully this will let it go comfortably in third gear.
Exactly. Exactly. That was a 15-inch, but apparently there was also a 13-inch in there with an i5 4258U processor clocked at 2.4 gigahertz, somewhat lower score, about half, 7,140. So I don't know if that means they're soon. Mavericks is September, right? We're pretty sure about that.
I think so.
Well, that's soon. This is July, August, September, 2 months.
And it probably won't even be an event. It'll just probably be like a little... people just notice, when I bought one,
remember
it seems
this
to be faster.
Army of new products, right?
Right.
So didn't Apple do that in September of last year? That was an amazing
October
event.
October was iPad and Mac.
They refreshed everything, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, within the span of about a month, because I flew back and forth to San Francisco a couple times.
Yeah, there was September, then there was October, yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing this year?
I think it seems likely. I mean, they went so long between then and announcing anything, and even when WWC rolled around, there was very little at WWC that was immediately available, right? The new MacBook Airs came out, but they talked about the Pro, which still doesn't come out. They talked about Mavericks and iOS 7, which are both in the fall. So it seems to me that they're talking about some stuff in the summer, coming around to launch it in the fall. And probably since the software platforms are coming out then, why not launch it alongside some new hardware?
Right. And you're going to launch the Pro with a special event, right?
Yep.
Definitely. So you might as well.
The Pro.
Yeah,
yeah,
you are.
You're the Pro.
Yes.
Yep. And then they'll go,
so you might as well say, and we are also doing Haswell across the line. And every one of our machines, iMacs and the MacBook Pros, we're going to put, Haswell's everywhere.
The Pro would be the time to do that.
They're also going to want to bring people up on stage to show the specialized apps that couldn't really exist or couldn't really perform the way that they do now, if not for something as specific as the new Mac Pro. So. That's not going to be a quiet one. That's going to be a stage one.
Do you think, Nickname wants to know, there will be a 17-inch, or is that gone?
You'll see a 17-inch iPad before you'll see a 17-inch Mac.
And you'll never see a 17-inch iPad.
Oh, my back.
I've played with, you know,
my
these.
Back.
Have you played with, the we have them here, the big Lenovo, yeah, like,
a
table
lot of, that's a lot
tablets.
It's a lot of tablet.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah.
It's a good workout for you, that upper body strength, though, right?
Yeah. They have to have special, special hinges.
But even my 10-inch iPad, you're just like, oh.
I know. Mini is it now. Everybody wants, I think that's the sweet spot. And
oh,
I think
no.
We've, no?
Oh, I'm sorry, the iPad Mini? Yes.
Yeah. Mini is 7-inch is the sweet spot now.
Right. I thought you were talking about, like, smaller notebooks.
No. I don't want a 7-inch notebook.
Follow me. Even like 10-inch and 11-inch.
No. In fact, like, you know what? 13-inch only for me now. I had an 11-inch Air, and I said no, you know.
The 11-inch Air is a little too small.
It's too small. I gave it to a small person.
I'm going to be the contrarian. I love my 11-inch Air.
I've been
using it for a couple of years. Oh, yeah. I travel a decent amount, and I find it's great in the airline seats and that cramped coach seats.
Who was that on Twitter who had an 11-inch Air?
Jason Snell.
Jason Snell loves it.
Had his 11-inch.
Jason and I both have.
In every show, he talks about it.
But it was so weird and dinky. Because I haven't seen one in a while. It was so dinky.
But I realized, I'm now starting to feel like I'm like the old-fashioned person to have a laptop. So to get back into Rwanda, the entire government is all on iPads.
What?
Like all the guys pull out their iPads. And they're not. And like I was like, do you have a laptop? He's like, oh, no. It's too heavy.
My favorite new show, which came out on Showtime last week, Ray Donovan. It's amazing.
Oh, I've heard about that.
One, highly recommend. It's Entourage meets The Fighter. If you can even imagine what that would mean. But he says, in the first episode, he says, honey, where's my iPad? And now this is a big butch macho. He's got a Boston accent. He's tough. He's a boxer. Hey, honey, where's my iPad?
Yep.
Which shows you right there. I mean, I would have thought iPad. Oh, come on. How a feat. You know,
we should try to figure out, though. Like I'm on record as saying one of the reasons why I don't have an 11-inch Air is because I have a 10-inch iPad and a Bluetooth keyboard. To me, that's superior to the Air in many ways. I think that once you start talking to people about what is it about the 11-inch Air that they can do that they can't do on an iPad.
I know.
And what apps would they require Mac OS for that wouldn't work better on 13 inches than 11 inches?
Well, I mean, I don't know about 13 and 11, but my big thing, the reason I don't use an Air is because the mail app is designed for low volume. mail. I mean, I lose, there is so much mail that I do not get on my iPad and on my iPhone. When I go to my computer, it's all there.
Use the Gmail app.
Like, I use the Gmail app, and you still, the iMapping with Gmail, I'll open it up and I'll see an email from somebody, and then it'll disappear. Like, it'll be just there for a minute, and then boom, it's gone.
It's like almost all mobile mail apps absolutely stink. It's shocking. Last time I was in New York, it's like I've had the optimism beaten out of me, the expectations that a mobile mail app is going to work. It's like, okay, I forgot to put into Evernote the address of the place I'm meeting today. Like, I'll do a search for the mailbox. I know exactly the name of the person who sent it to me.
Yeah, it doesn't show.
And no, I can't find it. So yes, I'm going to have to go into Safari. I'm going to have to run the mail at the webmail client on my web server because it has a simple box called search on it that will find things for me. But this is beyond the capabilities of
the Android. It's constant. It's a constant problem.
What is the best mail app? Is it Apple's mail?
Well, I don't know if it's the best.
Nobody. They all terrible. Yeah,
exactly. Nobody. They're all bad. But yeah,
I think mail is the best of the bad.
Yeah, it's the best.
But boy, I've used it, at least it's bad and pretty.
As opposed to
if you have multiple accounts, it's one of your only options too, because a lot of the other ones are Gmail only, and you can't get a unified inbox if you happen to.
I think most people now use the web, unfortunately, and it's not
again like for and another thing for me
because there were some really good mail apps that just did not get updated, you know.
And the problem with all the web stuff is, you know, I'm in South Africa, and South African Airlines once again has screwed up my tickets, and I need to get my codes, and then I have everything on my hard drive, you know, like I'm not because I don't have access to the web where I'm standing, you know, and that's the, you know, and being able to have it all, and I don't understand why I can't just tell my iPad, okay, I'm going to give you 10 gigs. Just cash everything into my iPad. I don't want to do the web services, you know. And so the thing is that I find it very annoying that it says last 1,000 messages. I get 400 emails a day, so that's like the last two and a half days. Rather than I just want to give you 10 gigs and then just fill it up and tell me when it's filled up and I'll give you more.
So I have 86,618. Is that unread messages in my inbox? when does it break?
let us know, Leo. You're on the
Maybe it's not that you don't get invited to these exclusive events. It's just
you just don't. No, but a lot of them are, and I'm sure this is true of everybody. Mm-hmm. Newsletters I subscribed to, or you know, I'm pretty assiduous about unsubscribing to unwanted mail. I mean, whenever there's an unsubscribe at the bottom, because otherwise I can never get through my mail. Nevertheless, a lot of this stuff is PR and stuff like that.
My inbox is just the stuff that doesn't have a filter. So it's like the stuff that, you know.
No, my inbox is stuff addressed to Leo Laporte.
Oh, and mine's not.
What you should do, to Alex Lindsay, because then you know it's to you.
But even if it's to me, my big thing is that then I have whitelist, which is anything that I have in my address book or anybody that I've actually interacted with. So that goes into the whitelist. And then if you haven't done that, then then there's codes.
We need to do a special
on how you manage
on email, because it's broken. Yeah. You guys just said how could it be that there is no good email app?
The kids aren't using email anymore, Leo. They're all moving to Instant Messenger. Oh, we're just signing up.
Doesn't that reduce the volume, though? It seems like if all the kids, you know, we're moving out of that.
Somebody's using it.
There's a shifting curve here, right? I think the answer is to be friendly to fewer people.
I do admit that I am always behind the kids' curve, you know, where, you know, I see my kids will be like, you know, I don't use email, I just text and everything else. And then I find myself now, like, someone will email me something. I'm like, why did they just email me that? Why was that not a text? You know, like it's just, it wasn't fast enough, because the email does seem to be too slow.
The speed of light is problematic.
I would email them, but it'll take too long for them to respond. If I just text them, I'll get it right back. You know,
I've been there. I agree. It seems absurd.
Yeah.
I like that level of triage, though. I like that I've sort of trained the world that, you know, the only people who ever instant message me are the people who I really do have that kind of relationship with, where they feel as though they know how I would react to any specific piece of news or any specific invitation to conversation that they're creating on AIM or on G+ or anything like that. It would be terrible if this were like if I could be in the middle of something and then someone wants not only wants to pitch me something but wants to have a conversation with me about Oh, I'm sorry. It's a bad time. Would you like me to try again later? No. Well, oh, is this the sort of pitch you'd be interested in? No. Oh, what kind of pitches would you be interested in?
None.
If this were email, I would simply do nothing. And then if you emailed me again later, I would say, oh, I'll hit command option whatever and thank you for sending that thing. It was very interesting, but I don't think it's been used amount of time. I'll be in touch later for any more information. Thank you. Bye. And you not go.
Right. Like, well, and do you find that when you do a lot of texting, it changes the way you email? Like, for everyone in the company knows, and my company knows, that if you send me an email longer than 6 lines, the chance of me reading it is almost zero. And I mean, like, literally, I just see a big email and I don't even look at it. I just go, okay, I'll get to that
later.
Do
you guys think that, I mean, all the development now is going into mobile apps, mailbox,
triage.
So are those better? I mean, is
nothing's better
until
you
don't use
the
iPad for
until
mail.
I can cache it. Until I can cache everything on my iPad, nothing's better. And someone should just build an app. I would love a mail app. This is my big request. Someone just build a mail app that I can cache.
What do you mean cache?
If I can pull all of my all of my email that I've gotten in the last 3 years.
Well, that's what Gmail does in the web.
No, but I don't want it on the web.
It seems like Mailbox should do that. I mean, given I'm surprised that Mailbox, given that they've been acquired by Dropbox, that seems like a great.
But I don't want it on the web. I want it on my phone.
Right, but Dropbox, you can cache specifically. You can say, oh, okay, I need 500 megabytes or 5 gigabytes or whatever. It seems like that's an opportunity for them to work into.
Because I would switch to that immediately, and then I would actually use mail. on my iPad. I mean, but the problem is I just look at it. I try to respond on stuff on my iPhone, but because it's with me all the time, but I know that there's like literally half the email I'm not seeing on my iPhone for whatever reason. It's just not showing up. I still think it's like a threaded conversation.
Yeah.
It makes me want to learn a programming language and go out there and write one.
It doesn't make even me. On the I web, thought that
Google
I wanted to learn.
Thing where it's
and I realize it's really hard.
Mail must be very hard because the first version of any mail program is broken irrevocably.
Yeah.
Mailbox was a good example. It just was just broken irrevocably. And then, they fix it. They fix it, I guess, as more people use it. I guess mail is tough. It seems like it should be so simple.
People all have different usage cases, right? Yeah. Like Alex needs that caching, which is not something necessarily that everybody needs, but it's really important to him. And I think, for example, I use flags a lot for things I want to come back to. And for a long time, mail on iOS did not have that ability. So it's tough because people are very individualized in the way that they use their mail. And so what works well for somebody doesn't necessarily work well for somebody else.
Also, I should just write my own app.
We should all write our own apps.
Yeah.
We need to write
our own mail apps.
Everybody make an app.
if only 10% of all users wrote apps, that presumably would cover all the use cases.
That would be a lot of apps. That's all I'm saying.
Then you need an app to sort through your mail apps, and it just there's a rabbit hole. It gets tricky.
Caching. The other thing with caching is being able to just save it to a database. Just being able to say, take everything.
I was going to say, if there's one feature I would love to have, it's just simply give me a grayed out padlock icon next to every message. And this is something that I definitely want to have online or offline, click the padlock, which means that keep this on my device. Never delete it.
Yeah.
If you run out of space, don't delete it. Make space.
Have a folder of, my whitelist, for instance. Like, I don't want to keep everything, but the stuff that's in my whitelist, these folders I want to be locked so that they stay on my
iPad. A measure of how difficult this is to look at Gmail, which is probably the most used, certainly by sophisticated users, the most used email program. And remember, they did Priority Inbox a year ago, and now it's gone, and they've got some other solution. Mm-hmm. They can't figure it out either.
Right, and someone asked about why I don't use POP, and the reason you don't use POP is because
no, it deletes it on the server.
Well, not only that, the big thing with POP is that you respond to something on your laptop, and you don't have any record of that on your
phone. You have to use IMAP or some similar centralized system.
Keep it.
Google now has primary, and then they have these tabs for social, promotions, updates, and forms. I've actually found this to be fairly useful once you kind of understand how they're doing this.
I haven't done anything with that.
You have to turn that on. And then, the theory behind Google's mail was that everything's saved. You don't ever delete anything. You archive it. You can delete it, but the idea is never.
Again, as long as you're always connected, you're set. Except when you're on a.
So what you need. I'm going to write this for you.
Thanks, Leo.
You need a program that will be a database. Maybe we can write in FileMaker or something on your desktop that will grab the Google Mail, do all sorts of prioritization, then put it in a database. But you want a database.
No, yeah, on my desktop, it's fine. Like, because it is a database. It's all sitting there. Now, what I would do, there are programs that I haven't quite figured out how to work completely that will take everything out of Mail, and put it into a FileMaker document. There is somebody who writes that program. And
right.
I can't
sure.
get it to work.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm sure that it could be written better, or I could learn better. I'm not a very smart guy. Yeah. So, but the on my the big problem is I really want to use my iPad as my primary computer, and I can't because it never
well, FileMaker has all my... will solve that because you use a FileMaker centralized database and you use Bento or FileMaker client on your
as long as
iPad and
it
can
it.
See the network database.
But the problem is that I've spent a lot of time on a plane and I need
I'm not going to solve your problem. I'm going to solve mine. Yours is too hard.
Just needs to let me. All they need to do is just not be limited to 1,000 messages. Be limited.
You know,
to...
Dropbox could do this. They bought Mailbox, right? Mm-hmm. And Dropbox, you know, really is trying to. Get this whole that exact thing solved so that it's always visible on all your devices.
Right.
Dropbox could solve that. They're having a big conference right now, as a matter of fact.
You know, the really sad thing is that back when I used to use Elm as my mail reader on a Unix box, it's like every time a search Elm. Fails or any time organization fails, I remember, you know, there was a time where if I wanted to find an email, all I had to do was grep my inbox and I'd find it.
You could grep
it.
It
never, ever failed and was really quick and simple. I would love
all
to
right,
be
so,
able to
so
grep
Andy's, links. Andy's so app fast. Is going to be called Grep My Inbox. I think that's what it's
it's I a like it.
Right there.
Let's just make a mail app called Grep.
The popular Norwegian game show, Grep My Inbox.
It means something very bad in Norwegian, though, so don't use that.
It only airs after 11.
It just seems like such an opportunity, but I guess it's tough. You know,
it's
who's got
on so many levels. The other problem is I actually spent like about an hour and a half last week talking to one of the lead user interface engineers on Gmail, and they were saying that one of the problems is that they can make changes to this was kind of interesting. They feel as though they can make interface changes to search because that they can't make to Gmail because people's relationship with Google search is that this is an app that it presents itself to everybody and it's an app that belongs to everybody. However, my Gmail inbox is my turf. And so if you make a change to how my spot of real estate works, people get very, very utsy about it.
Reputedly, Hillary Mason, who's the chief scientist at Bitly, has the most amazing email automation ever. She has written massive scripts. And I've been Hillary, if you're listening,
come be on the show.
We really want to know how you do this. And it's like the great white whale. It's like Moby Dick. I've only heard tales of it.
Well, and I think that the problem is you have to decide where you're going to filter too, because I filter at mail, but I really should be filtering at Gmail, because what the problem that I have is that Gmail just looks like this random, like when I go into the web page, the web version of Gmail, it just looks like this random collection of stuff because I have like 40 or 50 rules that are putting things into folders for me. And if I, you know, in mail, but not in Gmail. So the web version has very limited.
See, limited I don't think we're going to fix it with just an app. I think that the solution here is really like more intelligence. I think we're going to see things like Siri and Google Now that are like, all right, I'm just going to figure out based on algorithms, like here are the three emails that I need to tell you about. And then when you sort of bring up your summary of like, okay, what's going on today? It's like, oh, here are these three emails you need to look at. I think it's so entrenched with email itself and with the way mail clients work that it's really hard to just go in and fix that by writing a new app. But if you can write something that sort of overlays that and just sort of cuts out all the trash, it's kind of like a spam filter, but it's something even more intelligent.
It needs to know.
Like it seems like. It seems like something that you're right, Dan. I mean, it seems like something that intelligence could really figure out. It seems as though the app can figure out that, oh, it seems as though Andy always clicks on a mail that's been sent by Alex Lindsay. That's a vote for making sure that his emails go a little bit closer
to the
top.
That's what Priority Inbox is supposed to do, but I guess it didn't work because they discontinued.
And what Mailbox's server-side component was supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
But all these wonderful dreams.
Why do these things not work? There's the most I should almost keep like a little leaderboard of the most upset that a certain piece of hardware or software has ever made me over a calendar year and give out an award at the end of the year because
Skype would win that award year in year out.
That would be we would have to retire to the Hall of Fame probably.
But I don't know if it's fixable. I've used Gmail for years and I'm getting email. I miss email and I go there and I search for it and I see it and it turns out that it's in the all mail but not in the inbox and I have zero filters running on Gmail. So there's
no
reason
trying to be smart and that may be a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, on the flip side, I still get spam. Like, and this seems like a problem that we should have had to fit, you know.
I think Gmail's done pretty well. I do get spam, but it's done pretty well with the spam, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Gmail has solved that issue. Thank God. It hasn't solved my 28,000 emails in my inbox.
It solves it if you think it's okay to use Gmail. And the fact that at some level content is being exposed to Google means that I can't use it for a whole bunch of communications.
Well, you can't use anything that's not any spam filter then.
No, well, no, I can use completely client size.
Yeah, you could, or Spam Assassin on your own server, but I mean, if you can't use any webmail.
Google is a separate thing. I mean, sometimes you need to be able to tell somebody that the content of this email was never, ever, ever looked at by anybody. Excuse me. As far as the sender or the receiver knows, has never been looked at by either the sender or the receiver. And that, it's not that I think that Google is like quietly indexing every email that goes through my Gmail box just to mine it for stuff that they can use against me or for their own purposes. But nonetheless, it's a binary thing. Either this thing is a privileged piece of information between the sender and the recipient, or it isn't. And even if Google is just looking it for examining it for AdWords that they can attach to while I'm viewing it, that's not good enough. So that's why Gmail is, it's not a fail, but it's not an adequate solution for
always makes me wonder why a more seamless encryption, mail encryption, hasn't become more popular, especially recently with all the revelations of the government and things like that. It seems like that's something that, you could build into a mail client.
It does seem like it. I mean, I know that there was one point in the Pixel Core, probably in 2002, 2003, where it was required. Everybody in the company was on
Really?
Mm-hmm. And, So
you're guaranteed that those emails are now stored in the NSA's file system.
Exactly.
Because they said
that. It's so onerous still, right? Like, that's the
problem. It's not hard. No, I have to say this part. It has gotten very easy if you're using Mac and Apple Mail. It's very easy. The GPG tool now is trivial to. They've really solved it. In fact, I have it installed here. So when I want to do a new mail, if I click this little certificate button, I've digitally signed it with OpenPGP, and then if I want to encrypt an email to you, then what I have to do is search for you on the. If I don't have your key already, search for you on the key server. That's gotten very easy too, especially if you know the ID.
Right.
I can send, you and I could send encrypted email pretty straightforwardly.
But you need to have buy-in from everybody, right?
Well, you can only encrypt it to people who want to encrypt it, because they have to be able to, you have to have their key and they have to have your key, and but it's so easy to install it now. I'm hoping that more people do just turn this on. When I mentioned this last week, I started getting emails.
I realize I haven't. I didn't know it was there.
Let me show you. I thought I made this the pick of the week last week. It's GPG Tools. .org, and this installer is trivial. Now, the issue with, first of all, it's open source, which I think is really important.
Yes.
You can use some other system, a certificate system, but that there is no guarantee that that's not being broken at some point upstream. This, you're generating your public and your private key. You're sharing your public key on their key server. It's at MIT. But nobody's really validated that that's your key. So what you have to then do is say, hey, please sign my key. People actually have key signing parties. But I'll sign your key, and you sign my key.
Okay.
And that makes it somewhat more – and you develop what is called a circle of trust. And it makes it – so if Renee Ritchie, Annie Inako, and Alex Lindsay have signed my key, it's pretty certain that that's my key, right? So it becomes more and more trustworthy over time. And all of that's exposed and visible. It's trivial to install this on Apple Mail. It's one of the reasons I continue to use Apple Mail, is because it's so easy to put this on. And once you've got your keys, you can export them and put them on all your machines. It's harder to do it on mobile.
Right.
I haven't figured that out yet. GPG is pretty good privacy, or new privacy guard.
I think that these types of things on mobile and everything else, because of the NSA stuff, is going to become it's a booming industry.
Yeah.
I think that they've really built. If someone wants to look at the next great apps that make them lots of money, it's probably going to be encrypted communication.
Samsung provides built-in encryption into their email client. I can't remember who it is.
Right, but on Blackberry's earnings call today, they were talking about enhanced or premium security, and they were referencing a lot of the news cycles as well. So it looks like it's going to be something people start competing on, which is nice.
Which is exactly the opposite of what the NSA wanted, right?
Yeah. That's why they're going after Snowden. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah.
I was just saying, if the companies start providing it, though, then people start having the same freak out over, well, does that mean I have my keys? Does the company have my keys?
That's why you use open source. Yeah. That's why you use GPG or PGP, because you keep the keys. No one else has the keys. It is absolutely secure. And you can make it a 2048er, 4,096
Well, and the thing is that is, Richard Yaw said in the chat room, you know, no one cares except for, you know, terrorists or whatever, the NSA. The big thing is that a lot of people, the question is how hard will they try to become encrypted? But if it becomes super easy to be encrypted, everyone's just going to put on, you know, if it doesn't cost you anything in time to put a 4096 right. on, everyone will just put a 4096 on.
If it's something you have to turn off as opposed to turn on,
yeah.
right. then that changes right. the whole
and
game.
And you want to see law enforcement have a fit?
Everyone's on 4096. Yeah.
Do that. It will, yeah. but they will pass laws to make encryption illegal at that point. I swear to you they will.
I think it's a politically complicated thing to do.
Well, it might be hard to do.
It would that would really raise the stakes. I mean, the thing is, there are so many of these little public privacy intrusions, like license plate capture systems, that are just as a matter of routine set up to every car going in and out of a certain city. That they say, "Oh, I'll see." Well, you can't have a law against this because this is simple visual confirmation. But once you simply say, "Okay, that's great. Hi, this is Google. This is Microsoft. This is Apple, and we've all decided that we're going to make really good encryption default on every single piece of hardware and software that we sell, and now law enforcement has to say, okay, we're going to demand a law saying that we have the right to look into private mail for any reason without a warrant. That is an expensive piece of legislation to get.
I don't think they do that. I think what they do is they just go, I bet you anything, they've already done this. They've gone to Microsoft and said, we'd like a backdoor to BitLocker. They've gone to Apple saying, we'd like a backdoor to File Vault.
A backdoor is a different thing. The thing is you can set up an encryption system so that the creator of the system does not have it's sort of like how a BitTorrent originally worked or Napster originally worked, saying yes, you can come to me, the creator of Napster, but the thing is I don't have a copy of that thing that you say got stolen. I simply created a mechanism so that people can do whatever they want with a certain level of freedom. So if they were afraid of that, they could create a system so that yes, if you'd like, you can come to us with the proper paperwork and we can try to get into it, but we don't have to put in a back door unless you actually pass a law saying that this is required and we're going to fight you against that.
Well, and also having a back door means there's inherently a vulnerability for people to
security.
Get into.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why and that's why they would argue against it.
Well, and I think the nice
thing about using Apple and using Google for your mail service is that you know that you're a smaller ISP. Once someone shows up at their front door, once law enforcement asks them, we don't have a warrant, we don't have the paperwork, but we're going to make it very, very your life will be so much easier if you give us access to one of your clients' email inboxes. They don't have the resources necessarily to fight that battle every single day. Google and Apple, they have departments that will say, great, please enjoy this iBooks author document that explains exactly the procedure that we have for you asking us to give you client data. And that's why they're better defenders of your personal information.
No, and I think it's one of those one of the issues where it's one thing for the government to just kind of suck up lots and lots of information, and it's another thing for them to explicitly require people to leave their front door open.
And that's the American government. I mean, I'm subject to a completely different government. I don't know what your government's doing to me. I don't know what other governments are doing. So even if you solve the American problem, we are in a whole world now where everyone is looking at this information, which is very uncomfortable.
Here's some good news to cheer you up. Apple and Amazon have ended their lawsuit
over the
App Store.
That's good news for them, I guess.
I guess. So the trial was scheduled for August 19th. Remember, Amazon called its App Store an App Store. Apple said, wait a minute. We got an App Store. App Store in Apple parlance is two words. In Amazon parlance is one word, the App Store for Android. Apple spokeswoman Kristen Huguet said, we no longer see a need to pursue our case. With more than 900,000 apps and 50 billion downloads, customers know where they can purchase their favorite apps. Marty Glick, that can't be his name. Isn't that Martin Short's sweaty lawyer? Anyway, Marty Glick, a lawyer for Amazon, said this was a decision by Apple to unilaterally abandon the case and leave Amazon free to use App Store. So it's over. They gave
Yay.
Up. Yay. That's
and
one.
With our recent downloading of our 45,000th application, we believe that we've created the entire brand awareness. So, that
Huge win for lack of creativity. I mean, even BlackBerry could come up with App World. How hard is it to come up with a name for an app store that's not confusing?
Yeah, but yeah, I, well, you think it, though the Amazon? I mean, it did say App Store for Android. I don't think they were trying to confuse people.
Also, I mean, vegetable store, like grocery store. Oh my God, that's such a brilliant breakthrough bit of of design. That no, it's apps. A store
Google Play. I mean, how creative is that? I mean, that's. I mean, no one's going to confuse that.
Well, I do think that this points to a little bit of Tim Cook versus Steve Jobs, where Tim's just like, yeah. Hey, this isn't worth the trouble. Like Steve Jobs is principle
distraction.
Like, this is something that he is, you know, personally. Right. I think he was very like, you can't touch our turf, and we don't want, you know. And Tim Cook, I think, looks at everything like, eh, this doesn't make any sense.
Maybe this will herald a kind of a new approach to all this, you know. And Apple's losing some cases with Samsung too. There've been injunctions against selling iPads and iPhones in the U.S., and this is going. I mean, just a mess. It's ugly on both sides. Mm-hmm. Now, Boston University is suing Apple. For a variety of things, apparently.
I believe that was something that was a local news story around here. I believe it's a professor who came up with it.
Right. Thin gallium nitride process. Films. He says, I made that up, and Apple's been using it, but apparently others are already paying him license fees. The patent only has a year to run. I guess he needs to get it now. But
Boston University needs some money.
Right. But they do want to ban Apple products. That's part of the lawsuit. I don't know why how this gets.
That's always what you have to ask for. I want to ban the product.
Like, an injunction to stop Apple from selling or distributing the products that use this gallium nitride technology.
I want to ban this product unless you will bring some large sacks with dollar signs on the side.
$1 million.
Yeah. We're being completely reasonable. We just want a temporary injunction against all Apple products. Just while we hash this out.
Yeah, let's just figure this out.
Did you guys see the This American Life about patents?
There's two now, and they did the second one, which was a must listen, apparently. I have not listened to it yet, but it's a must listen. Yeah, it's about the podcast.
The guest for Carbonite. Yeah, and they were talking, because Carbonite is the one that fought the...
Love that. Yeah. Apple One computer fetches $387,000 at Christie's auction. Hope you saved your Apple
One. I would have gotten it if I had $387,000.
Did you save your Apple One?
I didn't have an Apple One.
Should have saved it.
My first one was an Apple IIe.
That's not worth nearly as much.
Those were always crazy expensive. But I remember, like, when I was in junior high, the classified ads in the back of Byte magazine, seeing an Apple One that caught my eye. And even then, this was like early 80s. And even then, the asking price was something like $2,000.
That was the 2,500 was the benchmark price for computers for years, and now it's like $200. It's amazing. You kids, you don't know what you got.
Yes. We had to get for that. What was the resolution of Apple IIe? It was like 192 by
3x2.
Was it 192 by 128?
And 8 colors or something?
Because I used to write code for it.
And low-res graphics.
You'd write all this code, and it would always be turned this HDR2.
That's why Dan liked that game. I can't remember the name of it. That was one of the freebies during the App Store. Exactly. It reminded me of, this is exactly like HDR2 graphics on the Apple IIe. This is awesome. Only the frame rate is somewhat better.
How many hours I lost to beer
runs? It's no number munchers, but it's pretty great.
I mean, it depended on how many colors you wanted, because I think if it was at 182 by 128, you got like 16 colors. But at lower resolution, you go into low res mode, and you get more colors for that.
It's been downhill ever since Little Breakout. Let's just say that up front.
That's because
Apple had one color; it was green.
It's because of Woz's clever memory mapping. So here's an Apple Apple II boot prop. does this make you feel
so good?
And now I come to you.
You're standing at the edge of a ridge. There's a forest on one side.
I guess this is a whole video of just women. It's got to be something. Here's some graphics.
We'll have some Journey move and Asia playing in the background just to set the whole tone.
I think there is. Turn up the audio. This is not how good the sound was. This is somebody doing lyrics to the in ASCII. All right, enough. I found it on YouTube, and I'm sorry.
We spoke to Jordan Mechner about making Karateka, and he said that you couldn't do movement and sound at the same time, so you had to stop whatever was happening and then play a sound, then move it again.
That explains a lot about that game.
That explains the eagle.
Mechner, though, went on to do Prince of Persia, which was not bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not bad at all. So we're getting some information from the code in the iOS beta. For instance, offline voice dictation for iOS.
Yay.
Which would be nice. A hidden iOS beta option points to iOS in the car, AirPlay support over Wi-Fi. You know, a lot of car manufacturers, remember that slide of all the car manufacturers are going to put Siri in their cars.
I'm just waiting for Apple to release a car.
The pedal will be on the left.
There won't be a pedal.
You don't need a brake and an accelerator.
No. You'll just lean forward a little bit.
It'll be like a Segway.
Yeah, it's a Segway.
We find that 20% of drivers almost never turn left.
The really cool. I mean, if you want to go left, you just take like three rights.
Yeah, exactly. You've pretty much done it.
It's much simpler.
I just think it's a little bit more driving, but it's less stress.
It's a workaround.
Just think, you never have to take a left turn. I mean, just think of all the stress you go through about looking at oncoming traffic and all this other stuff. They're going left.
And once everybody on the road is only taking right turns, traffic just flows that much more smoothly.
Exactly.
Plus, the mapping stuff really works great then.
Have you guys played with the... I guess for some reason, I got the beta for iWork implemented, and it's pretty cool. Even works on non-Apple computers quite well, which is neato.
Leo?
Yeah.
The iOS in the car thing, before we move on, that's actually really cool because it looks like, I mean, when Apple introduced AirPlay, you could start projecting an interface from an iOS device to a television.
Right.
And it looks like this builds on it and takes it sort of the next level where it becomes an interactive thing. And if you buy a car that has a built-in system, that's fine. But car manufacturers aren't always great about letting you upgrade, the next year's radio or next year's thing.
Right.
But when you decouple interface from device and you can just project an interface onto a car screen, the device will update and then you'll automatically get all of that for free on the car. And I think if you start thinking about Apple projecting interfaces into other technology, it's really interesting.
Yeah. The car thing is huge because, I mean, I bought a new car last year and I had so much frustration with the electronics. Everything in this car was awesome. I thought it was really well designed. It's a Volkswagen. It's just got some really nice UI for like just the climate controls and most of the stuff that's in there. And then there's the radio and it's terrible. It's so bad. I mean, it's this primitive touchscreen that feels like you're at like an ATM or something. And the firmware takes like 2 hours to update. You got to bring it into the shop. And I had this huge problem where on the Bluetooth streaming, it would play one channel. It would play the right channel over both speakers, which is maddening if you listen to any sort of like classic rock music where there's stuff that's only on one channel.
I do wonder how attached they are to what they're doing.
But I think someone who wants to be competitive, I mean, I know that I would buy my next car if I was looking at one and it had an iOS based system that I knew that was just an iOS that just ran on it, that you could put apps on and do all the other things.
I'd buy that in a heartbeat. It's going to be a Kia or a Hyundai.
I'd buy that.
Yeah, but actually, there's two things. First of all, Renee is spot on. That's one thing that really got my full attention when I saw it in the keynote. And having talked to car companies that are using this technology, I was chiefly talking to them to ask them, well, is this because my first question was, well, great. So this is going to be an option for people who buy the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 car. And no, this is for people who even buy like the $17,000 budget car. Not only that, but I was talking to people who work in GM service and saying that they will actually just have a service upgrade for a lot of existing cars that will make it work. And Renee, the thing that really got my attention and this has only gotten me more excited is that I think Apple has just quietly said, we have the ability to project iOS and lots of its user interface elements onto any screen of any size, of any capabilities that we choose makes sense for our strategic plan. Yep. So Apple doesn't comment about unannounced products, but sometimes they have to say, look at this thing we can put inside a tiny little car screen that has nothing to do with a tablet or a phone, and say, think about what you want about this.
I mean, I think that's a huge market that Apple is maybe starting to look at. I mean, whether it's appliances or cars or, you know, all the other things, we kind of want them all really, you know, really tied in. Like, I know that I would be very, you know, for almost anything that I buy that remotely has a brain. I would love to have that information.
I don't even care if it's tied in. I just want to work better. Like, that's my problem with so many things. Car manufacturers' core competency is not building UIs for stereo and navigation systems, right? It's building cars. So we should outsource that.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a CRV, and all I want is to take that big screen that came with it and just pop it out and put my iPad in, you know, and then just and but what I really want is then to have all the data that's coming in from the car, so that, and then people could be writing apps to look.
That's
at data.
Tricky too, though, because you really want to isolate the car's computer system.
No, no, you don't want to control it. I don't want to control the car. Yeah. But you can
data,
have it
one way.
There's companies that make these little.
Yeah, because
you know,
what do they call those dock?
But imagine that being fed, and there's some that use Bluetooth to feed it to your iPhone now. But what if you could just that was part of what's there, and then people could write their own apps to see and manage that.
When we talked to Ford, that was one of the things they kept saying is we know our platforms don't evolve as quickly as consumer technology. That's why we want to have an API. That's why we want to court developers. But they still want to very tightly control the interface. You're basically saying let's give it to Apple and see what they do,
which is what a lot of companies are doing. And the thing that Andy said that I think is really interesting is when Apple did iOS 7, people complained about the icons, they complained about the font size, but Apple built a physics engine, a particle engine. They made a dynamic interface, something that has existed in other technology for years, but they put everything together and made it mobile. And when you add iOS in the car and AirPlay, you can now have that dynamic interface rendered on the fly on other devices. And that opens the floodgate to anything basically running iOS at some point, as long as Apple comes to the agreements to do it.
Do you do it with – now, Ford did a deal with Microsoft, Microsoft Car, but Microsoft really gets out of the way and lets Ford put their UI on top of it. Audi does stuff with Google.
With QNX and a lot of cars.
Who would you want to work with? Microsoft, Apple, Google? Who would you want
to? You don't have to. The nice thing about this is you don't have to work with Apple. You can have QNX running your car. You can have Sky. Yeah, it's just an AirPlay. It's like it doesn't matter whose TV you make. Right. As long as you include the technology for the Apple television in it, it can broadcast to that screen.
But I think that's interesting.
I think there's a lot of people that would prefer not to. I think there's a lot of people that would just prefer an iOS or an Android or whatever. But I think that you have to decide what.
You also
is.
Have the issue of liability and distractibility. And if you let a third party change the user interfaces in the car, then I think you have liability issues as well.
Well, I mean, the ones that are in there right now aren't that great.
They're terrible.
Right. There's so many cars where it's like touchscreen based. Everything's on a touchscreen.
Ford
That's the
finally
last thing
acknowledged
I want to be doing while driving.
My Ford Touch was a terrible idea. And so they you hit the nail on the head, Dan, when you said they don't have any expertise in UI. Mm-hmm.
And you carry your phone with you all the time anyway. It's your environment. It's all the stuff that you want. It has your music. It has your apps and the ability just to have that brain. And a lot of companies have spoken about, you know, the smart box being in your pocket and projecting to all different sorts of interfaces. But this is where we start to see that. You just have your one thing, and where you go, that thing takes whatever form it needs to take.
I think they're very reluctant because I think of the law. You know, of course, there's a huge legislative backlash now on distracted driving. I think that anything that would in any way make the manufacturers more liable in that regard, they're going to be very sensitive to.
Ferrari's doing it, Leo.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Oh, well, look, the liability on a Ferrari is already so big. You may just put like a spike in the middle of the dashboard. I mean, like, it's going to be that much more dangerous.
That's interesting. Does Ferrari do that full let iOS take over?
Well, they put up a big slide of all the different manufacturers who are going to do iOS in the car. And there was I forget how many. There were 9 or 12.
It was about a dozen, yeah.
Yeah, and it's an interesting bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, what Ford decided is we're going to go back to physical buttons.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's smart. I think there's a usability. It's time-tested, right? Yep. Like, people have been using actual buttons for a long time, and they work pretty well.
And yet, I get in this Audi, and there's too many knobs and switches, and a Mercedes even worse. And so I don't know. It's a very tough thing to solve because consumers clearly want this, right? We want our stuff.
That launch button is so annoying, Leo. You press it and suddenly you're drag racing.
So just real quickly on iWork, Mark Gurman writing at 9to5 Mac guesses that perhaps Apple's next step is to make iWork kind of freely a part of iOS. Mm-hmm. Free services. You think? I have to say,
I don't think they make that much money off it.
Right.
And having it as a buy-in that you can get, just like with iLife, you know, iPhoto and iTunes and all that stuff, you know, if you can get that free, you know, why not? It just encourages more and more people to use Apple software and to buy into their services. It'll work great with iCloud. People are already getting iCloud for free. I mean, Google can offer Docs for free. Then why not offer iWork for free?
Look at this. This is Keynote in iCloud. I mean, it's pretty much the same as Keynote anywhere else. This is coming straight off the web with HTML5 and Safari. I mean,
it's really nicely done.
It is pretty amazing. really, how fast it is, and you know, I mean,
I think there were some leaks today showing the free downloads now include the iWork apps and some of the beta strings.
Interesting.
It's kind of interesting that $250 Samsung Chromebook now is an interesting and very useful entry point into iWork and iOS.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you think that's the intent?
And it gets them off the best paid apps list, which is nice for developers.
Yeah, right.
Three slots open.
Yep.
And the only thing the developers have to give up is that, oh, by the way, it's now impossible to sell any kind of a text editor or any kind of
Well, I mean, Google and BlackBerry bought the other two popular ones anyway, so I'm sure Apple's not mourning QuickOffice and Documents.go being off the list.
Yeah, but remember that the reason why you haven't really seen any good competitors is that Apple has never given developers good tools for text editing for writing your own third-party apps.
There are a ton of third-party text editors, though, and several of them are very good.
But so long as you don't do anything tricky like boldface.
Or try to use iCloud to save.
There's a decent number of those. I mean, a lot of them use Dropbox, for example.
There are a million plain text editors that use Markdown. But it's hard to name more than two three that
they have to build it themselves, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I've been talking to some of these developers, and they were holding out hope for iOS 6. And when iOS 6 came out, they said, okay, Apple's never going to give us these tools. We're going to have to build our own APIs for this. And now that they have new text engines in iOS 7, I think we're going to see some cool stuff. I mean, fortunately, Literature and Latte has started distributing showing off the screenshots from the iOS version of Scrivener. And I can't wait to see how that turns out.
Especially they've been working on that for a long time.
Just from the screenshots alone, it looks like it could be one of the greatest tablet apps ever made for any platform under any circumstance.
They stole the iMore app developer to do that. Tammy Caron, she's amazing.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, the spreadsheet and presentation software has never really been a huge market for third parties on iOS. I mean, there's not a lot of huge competitors, especially because Keynote and Numbers actually work really, really well on iOS.
Yeah, which makes you, but it does make you ask, like, should these are all awesome apps, and they are almost certainly best in class for mobile right now. But is Apple doing a great job by saying we're going to make it really tough to we're going to make it really hard for anybody to put the investment into make a great word processor or make a great presentation app because we're going to use inside knowledge to build our own version of this that kicks butt and costs about 18 cents.
Well, but you could say the same thing about the web browser market, right?
Or the mail. Like it'll bug Safari. Alex and he'll make one.
Yeah, I mean, mobile Safari is not really, there's almost nothing that's competitive to it. The closest you get is Chrome, but it's still required to use the same rendering engine, and they can't use all the nifty, Nitro.js and all that stuff that Safari uses. So it depends on whether you consider productivity of like the word processor kind of sort of core functionality that should be in the iOS in the OS period.
Mm. Like collaboration.
Well, Microsoft will probably go with compatibility as their killer feature.
I mean, I feel like there's nothing we can really use seriously unless we can have five people working on it at the same time.
You know what you're going to really like? The new typographic engine in iOS 7. Good article by, it's in German, unfortunately, Jürgen Siebert and Maurice Müller from the German font blog. Translated, though, on Typographica, and highly recommended. And one of the things they talk about, they say, you may not like the, Helvetica new ultralight font, but don't worry because the iOS 7 font engine has completely redesigned and has some amazing typographic characters. It's the first mobile device with real typographic control for developers. They call it dynamic type. It will be the first electronic device that will, by default, consider a quality of type that hasn't been given so much attention. This is the age of letterpress, and this is a font designer talking. Operating system level typographic control. So maybe you don't like, I don't like the ultra-thin Helvetica, but that's not all you're going to see. Users can now use sliders with 7 stops, settings, general, text size to adjust the text size in every app according to their own taste. You have lots more control, and developers, even more importantly, will have a ton of control over this. So, interesting article.
So if you screw it up, it'll be all your fault. You can't.
Developers, it's your fault. Sad to note, we mentioned it on Twitter, of course, but Doug Engelbart, the designer of the computer mouse and the man who really made modern computing possible, has passed away at the age of 88. Quite a legend, quite an amazing fellow. At SRI, he showed the – he had the – what was it? The The Mother of All Demos in 1968, where he showed accordion keyboard, a mouse, wind, I mean, just all of this stuff, and really kind of a predecessor to modern computing. A brilliant man.
You should definitely see that video, because I've shared that link with so many people over the years, and there's always a 1 in 6 chance someone will email me back and say, oh, that's fine. I could tell it was a fake. He had me up until the point where they started talking about collaborative document editing. And I knew this was – because wasn't there like a photo making the rounds about the 1957 image of what computers would be like in 2000?
Right.
And, of course, it was a Photoshop together. No, this was actually – he was actually doing all this stuff. And not only that, but he actually was demonstrating it working.
And live in real time, yeah. With Bill English behind the scenes, just an amazing amazing thing, and everybody's reports one of the sweetest guys in the world. I did meet him briefly. We had him on the screensavers with his mouse, and I think his grandson brought him. It was a really wonderful moment, and he was a very warm and humble fella. So just a note. There's a little video from the Mother of All Demos. That's Doug Engelbart. On the controls there.
See, you know, another great innovation, if you put your beverage on one of those wells and you spill it, it doesn't get into your keyboard.
We have to remember in 1968 what the state of computing was. Having a screen by itself was an amazing thing.
Your computer didn't fill a room. That was pretty great, too.
Yeah. Right, right. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with your picks of the week. But first, a word from our friends at Squarespace, the place to get not only the best web hosting in the business, but the best content management system. Boy, we've come a long way. You got to think somebody like Doug Engelbart looking at this a guy who really invented hypertext, looking at what the web has become, the power of the web, the beauty of these templates, the flexibility, the ability that you can have a great-looking website without being a coder, without being a programmer, but it's all yours. It's customized. It's exactly what you want, your domain, your social network. Go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and you can start today for free. You don't have to give them a credit card. Just sign up, and you've got 2 weeks, the run of the place. See what it'll do. Import your content from your existing site. It'll do that. The templates are fabulous. They've got designers working all the time to add new features, new templates, the latest, this momentum template we've talked about before, a full bleed design, particularly for photographers and designers who want to just make a beautiful website. These are all based on the momentum. This is the other thing I like. You know, once you pick a template, you design it, and you're going to make it yours. There's so many web design tools. They all look the same. You know, this is unique. This is your style. And it's why artists, people with real design sense and taste, love Squarespace.
And it looks great. And you don't crash it. I mean, an event, a live event, where there was a lot of like A-list, you know, folks and the people's website went down, you know, really quickly.
Isn't that embarrassing?
It's important. If you think you're going to do something that's going to be big, if you're going to do something small, it's not hard to put together and it's not very expensive. Yeah. And if you're going to do something big, you know that you can scale with it. I think it's important.
And of course, the price is right. Now they do have commerce now, which is fantastic. Once you've tried it for 2 weeks, if you decide you want to buy. Take a look at the pricing. $16, the most popular plan. That's $16 a month when you are billed annually. You can go month to month if you want, $20 a month. Still a very good fee. Considering you get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries and blogs, unlimited. For that price, unlimited bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill, even if you become the most popular site on the internet. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. When you sign up for a year plan, they will give you a custom domain free and hook it all up for you. If you want to do commerce, unlimited digital or physical products, a mobile store, inventory tracking. They do the tax. They do shipping. You have coupon control. That's $24 a month. And better yet, we're going to take 10% off your first purchase with a new account when you go to squarespace.com and use our offer code MACBREAK7. So try it free. You don't need a credit card. You don't need an offer code to try it free. But if you decide to buy, offer code MACBREAK7 gets you 10% off that first purchase on a new account. Really is a great place. We love Squarespace. We know you will too. Squarespace.com. And I want to thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly and actually of podcasts all over the world. They really, they believe in new media. They are a new media company, and I'm very grateful to them for it. Time for our picks of the week. I don't know, Dan, if you were warned.
I was warned.
Were you prepared? What would you like to tell the world about this week?
Well, I recently, for a while, I had both internet and digital voice through Comcast, who's my local ISP, and I decided I wanted to get rid of the digital voice, but I like having a landline because my cell phone signal really kind of is crappy in my apartment.
Yeah.
So I came across a friend recommended to me this company, Obi-Hi.
Oh, I love the Obi-Hi. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got this little Obi-100, which is just a little box, plugs into your router with an Ethernet cable, and then plugs into any phone with a standard phone cable, and you can now route everything. I mean, it's cool because they have their own VoIP service, which is fine, but now you can actually route Google Voice.
That's
the
what
VoIP
I do.
Component of, yeah, Google Voice over this,
yeah,
which is great because it's free, essentially, VoIP landline service to my house. And it works seamlessly. You plug it in, you go through, like, put in your Google credentials, and it's basically, you're done. You don't ever have to think about it again. So I hooked it up a couple weeks ago, and it's great because it's been, you know, it's my Google Voice number, so it rings that and my iPhone, and then wherever I am, I can pick up the right one, and it lets me, it's great for things, especially I find where, you know, I don't want to have my, you know, cell phone to do, say, an interview or something because I'm worried it's going to just break up or I'm going to lose my signal. But so far, it's been bulletproof and great.
And cheap.
And it's pretty cheap. Yeah, $40, right? Like, and you don't have to pay for the service at all. So that's basically just that one-time $40 outlay. And so I'm saving, like, you know, $10 a month that I was spending on digital voice service.
It's basically, yeah, I mean, that's my home phone. I put it on a cordless base station. I have cordless phones around the house, and I'm done. And it's free.
It's great.
I love it.
Yeah, I cannot recommend it highly enough, having used it now for several weeks.
Me too, yeah. I've had it for more than a year.
That's great. I'm
both know it'll keep working. HAI.com. Yeah, it's really cool. The Obi-100, $40. Good pick, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks.
Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is, I guess they saw that Apple was doing making five games free for the 5th anniversary, and EA didn't get included in that, and they felt kind of bad, so they wanted to give away some free stuff too. So they made Mirror's Edge, Dead Space, and Sims Medieval free. I don't know for how long it'll last. They're free today. Mirror's Edge came out with the original iPad. Very nice swipe-based game. Dead Space, incredibly atmospheric. It's one of those Space Hulk-type games where you're stuck in a derelict, demonic spaceship, and you got to fight your way through. And
oh, you're
Sims,
one of those.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're basically a genre unto themselves.
Thursday,
Renee. Thursday in Boston. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so all three of those games, they're not the newest games, you know, just like the games that are available for Apple's 5th anniversary aren't the newest games, but there's some classic games, there's some excellent games, and if you haven't tried them already, you can get them for free right now.
Cool. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
I've got two things.
Ooh.
Just little things.
Aren't you fancy?
No, they're just little. They're little. So number one is, I just dropped it.
It's on the ground.
It was there.
It's very drop resistant, though.
Yes, it is.
It's a gravity sensor.
Exactly. It, you can drop this. This is the Mophie Power Station.
Ooh, and it's rubberized.
This is the Power Station Pro.
Do you want me to hold it for the close-up camera?
There you go.
It's so nice looking. It looks so well made.
I know. I have a couple of these.
Look at that.
So this thing, that is essentially, yeah, you can bang it around a little bit. So that is about two whole, you know, iPhone charges. And I just don't go anywhere without it.
Super cool.
Yeah. Here's a little one.
Oh, there's got a little one.
I keep two of them.
So this is a single charge?
I travel a lot. So I have the cases. The cases don't... The problem with the Mophie cases is they don't last very long. They're like a half a charge or something. You know, they're wimpy. And so I keep these as kind of backups. I don't use them every day. They're just kind of sitting in my backpack. And but I got to tell you, there are times, you know, you're in the middle of, you know, South Africa, and you suddenly lose connection and you need to sort things out, and these are great. So, you know, they're just great to have there. They'll charge up your iPad, your iPhone, and it's just, or anything else. So, like, one of the other things that I use this for a lot is I'll take the smaller one and I hook it to my MiFi and I put it in my backpack when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
And then I just leave it there and it'll run all day.
Oh, yeah.
It'll just run the MiFi because the MiFi itself will only last 2.5 hours. You hook it to one of these guys and it'll give you your own personal Wi-Fi space, you know, for the entire day. And so it's a great way to kind of keep anything that's USB chargeable, you know, out there. And it has saved my tukus many times.
Tukus is saved.
Many, many times. So I felt like it was worth recommending. I've had it for, you know, probably a year now. And
You know, I was talking about the HTC One, which, like the iPhone 5, doesn't have a replaceable battery. And I was yelled at. I can't remember whom by.
Twitter.
Twitter, probably. They yell at me all the time.
Twitter's
saying,
very loud.
What, just take it. Take a battery with you. And then you don't need an external battery. And that's a good point. This is like an external,
But
I always have in my pocket, I always have an extra battery.
But I guess what
phone.
I'd say is that this is an external battery for anything that uses
anything.
USB.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that it's not just for your iPad or iPhone.
I carry this around, but this is only going to work for the Galaxy S4.
I use the ones Alex uses, too. They're fantastic. I take two of them with every trade show.
Yep.
They're bulletproof.
And it's anything that you have that needs to be powered by USB, you're plugging them into it, and it just makes it much
My only concern would be you're
testing out the... I've been using Google Glass like lots and lots of places.
Yeah, you need it for that.
I found the thinnest like little micro USB wire that I have, and so I can simply walk around with it plugged in all day long, and this battery pack in my pocket. And it's like, great, I've got 9 hours worth of battery life on this.
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah.
My only concern is that you might be paying more for that because of the brand name. How much is the Mophie?
I don't know.
Yeah, because here's what I use, which is not as cool a name. It's called the Jackery. Mm-hmm. But it's 10,400 milliamp hours for $50.
What's the capacity on the Mophie?
It's not that much.
6,000.
Yeah. And this has a fast charging port. It has a 1.2 amp.
I do think, I don't know for sure, but I think that the power station is actually a fast charging. I don't know for that for sure, but it seems to charge really
fast.
And
this is orange.
and you're saying
that
is
a flashlight.
And that's a feature?
You can have.
It's Homer Simpson's battery charger.
It doesn't, it
doesn't have the. I'm just saying. I agree with you in the principle, and I just don't know if Mophie is the only way to go.
No.
Other similar products.
I really like that one. That's one that I have.
It's beautifully made.
But I have to say that, and it's really stand. You know, I've used it a lot and banged it around a lot, and you see, I just dropped it on the show.
Yeah.
anyway, so that's the reason that I recommended it, but I think that getting an external battery like that just makes sense to have in your backpack.
I agree. When I travel, and this is enough, by the way, with 2.1 amps. I'm sure the Mophie is too to charge an iPad, right? You can get 10 watts out of that. So, and that's the key.
And you know, a lot of times I have, because what I basically carry, and I travel a lot, so it's a little bit special case. But I have two of the Mophie cases, and then I have those two, and that just means that I can run all day without worrying too much about it, because there's nothing worse than being in an airport without being able to check your. tickets.
It's like being able to breathe underwater.
Yeah.
Yes.
when you're in an airport and you see that everybody's like, where's a bottle? I need an outlet. Where's an outlet? Yeah. Probably said, yes. I remember a time when I cared about charging. That's before I decided to bring my own electrons with me. So,
yes.
I like to change my answer. It's sort of like that scene in the Michael Keaton Batman movie where the Joker is the only one in the art gallery who has the oxygen mask, and knows that everybody else is going to be gassed to death, and he's going to be okay.
Yes,
Andy, your pick of the week, sir. Or did you have two?
No, that's it. That's good.
Yeah, your pick of the week, sir.
This is a fun one. It's called Pixie Tracker. It's $2. It is a simple like chiptune like music app, and these things are just like fun as hell. There's not like just one of these apps out there, but it's like it doesn't turn music into keys and notes and staffs and things like this. It turns it into the fun of like a cheap Casio tone keyboard that you would just screw around with, and just simply by like placing like fat bits elements on this scrolling thing, you'll start off by just saying, okay, well, I'll just do a drum beat. Okay, that's fun, and then like 3 hours later, you've got like multiple tracks and two different transpositions and eight different melodies, and it's like just screwing around. I thought, oh, you know what I'd love to hear? Know what that needs? It needs a. I'll add the. Look, I've got it now. Isn't it wonderful? So it's like you buy certain games because you like to fill in those 4.5 minutes to 10 minutes of boredom, and then there's sometimes music apps you buy because it's like, oh, I wonder if I could. I have no melody in my head, but I bet just by drawing things on this little grid, I can make something interesting. And, oh, look, 10 minutes later, I have something interesting. Isn't that delightful? $99.
Pixie, PIXI tracker. For iPhone or iPad, either one. You laughed at my plank.
We scoffed.
You scoffed, so I installed it. Look, it works. I can hang my keys from a magnet, and I have a little platform for my phone. But now I submit for your approval from ilovehandles.com the next cool thing.
Uh-oh.
This is the Gumby Trunk. It's called the Trunk. It is a iPhone charger. It's a lightning port from I Love Handles. But USB on this side. Can I borrow your iPhone?
Yeah.
Watch. So I'm bending it, plugging it into the USB. Now I'm going to mount your iPhone on it. And look, it just floats straight in the air. Like that. Stands straight up. How about that?
I'm sure that's a level of stress on the USB port that Apple completely intended that port to support.
Carefully engineered with the aluminum.
The I Love Handles folks do say, do not attempt to bend it from the phone or the USB thing. Remove it and then rebend as needed. There. Now I get a nice little twist on it. How about that? Now how much would you pay?
If Eddie Murphy was doing the voice, it'd be priceless.
ilovehandles.com. Okay, you mocked my plank. But what about
Leo,
that?
It's called... Leo, you're good. It doesn't help it when you keep saying mocking my plank. As you're demonstrating this, I keep imagining like a BBC sitcom in which like the vicar is like knocking on the door, but he hears, now don't bend it that way. I don't want something to break. It's amazing how it keeps
you're mocking my plank. Oh, all right.
Keeping up appearances.
I guess I probably shouldn't order the pinhead then, which is a pair of...
Are you being served 2013?
If I ordered the pinhead, you would laugh. You would mock my pinhead, wouldn't you?
You got to make sure to unmount it before you change the position.
Well, so you must unmount it before. Now, this is a dock with feet. How about that? Now, how much would you pay?
But right. Wait, there's more.
All right. ilovehandles.com. These guys, I think they're very innovative. You guys think they're not, but I'm just saying.
I didn't say they weren't innovative. I'm just not sure what to do with it.
They've made for some amazingly entertaining shows, Leo.
I think the plank is a good idea.
It's only $20. And it comes in black or white. And now how about that? What about that? What about you plug it into your charger?
Black goes with my iPhone there.
You like that, right?
Yeah, it's much nicer.
Okay, so you can do that too. You plug your charger into the wall. You plug the trunk into your charger. And then your iPhone floats above the plug. When next time I go to a hotel, I'm ready. You're right. This is really putting a lot of stress on that.
I don't think I'd do that to a production computer.
Thank you for letting me borrow your phone. I hope I haven't ruined it.
I'm sure my phone's fine.
Didn't they make like a charging cord for the MacBook Air so you can do the same thing to sort of like bend it in an upright position next to the outlet?
Just have it floating in the air. it works. That's it for this show. There it is. I think that's a good way to use it with the plugged into the wall like that.
Also, it looks like a really cool, useful, compact thing to have in your laptop bag. And as a rare way to make sure that you have a Lightning to USB connector that you don't ever steal out of there and leave at your desk when you travel.
Not much chance of that.
Well, it doesn't get all tangled, right? Like it's not
tangles.
It's not tangles. Yeah, that's a selling point in and of itself.
And if you have a seizure,
put it right in the
mouth.
It would be good for this too. Hold on.
Keeps you from biting your tongue.
A little Mophie.
Oh yeah, so you can put it on your Mophie. Stick it in your Mophie.
It just takes me a little while. I'm not very smart.
Yeah, stick your trunk in your Mophie.
Stick your trunk in your Mophie. And now, how much would you pay? Look at that. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Oh.
Jesus, I heard a crack.
Not to say not good.
I think, again, no. I would say do not use the USB port. Do not. Oh, sorry if you broke the trunk. I don't care about that.
Yeah,
but it said don't bend it in the, you don't use the USB port for leverage. But see, then it works. It's not charging
too,
though, is it?
It is.
Thicker.
Oh, it is? Oh, good. Okay.
That's why we can't have nice trunks.
I guess I didn't follow the directions very well.
Did it break?
Yeah,
it's just a little.
Mrs. Slocum would have something to say about her house.
It's a little loose. It's all right. I didn't want it anyway. All right. That's it for this show. Thank you so much, Dan. I hope you'll come back. I hope we didn't scare you off.
I was delighted. Thank you for having me on.
Dan Morin is senior editor at macworld.com. What are you working on right now, Dan?
Well, I usually do new stuff, but it's a little bit slow, as we've noticed.
Yes.
This week, so.
We managed to fill 2 hours with wonderful verbiage, speculation.
It was a pleasure.
I didn't even have to make up a story.
We did.
I had some great stories, too.
Let's do that next week.
All right.
Next week, here's what we're going to do next week, because it's going to be slow through August.
Yes.
Until the next announcements. So here's what we're going to do next week. I want each of you to make up a story. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me it's made up. You can even add it to the rundown. And then we'll ask, we'll say, on this show, there were, you know, I guess one wrong story, one made up story for each of us.
Right.
And we'll ask the audience at home to identify the wrong story. And before the show's over, we'll tell you.
And what we should do, we should all put like $20 in a pot. And viewers have to guess which one was wrong.
Deal.
Or which ones were valid. And whoever makes up the story that has most people believing in it and causes Apple to actually not even allow us to even buy Apple products in the future because it's so... That was a bad idea. Let's not do that.
That's from the NPR show. What is it?
I think it's Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wait, Don't Tell Me. Yeah. We'll do that. We'll have four stories. One of them will be true. And then we'll ask the chat room to vote. We'll do a straw poll. We'll ask the chat room to vote. Yes. Whoever fools.
So we got to think of the most outrageous story that's actually true next week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then that's easy. But we'll go around and each person will give their story. It'll be one section in the show.
Yeah.
And that would be good to use for every show.
That'd be fun. It's a new segment.
I'll be in Scotland.
Nice to do that with your permission and knowledge this time.
What?
It'd be nice to do that with your permission and knowledge this time.
Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times, where I assure you, never makes up stories. He is the journalist, the quintessential journalist. Thank you for being here with your flattened squirrel.
We just had a big thunderstorm in the middle of the show. I'm sure that squirrel is feeling a little bit more peppery now.
He's peppery, yes. He's woken up. Thank you, Alex Lindsay. Where are you traveling to next?
Scotland, next week.
Oh,
so I should be able to...
The land of my people.
Yeah, and my people, too.
Yeah, the McLaport.
They kicked us out, so they're going to be like, I'm going to get there, and I'm going to be like, what are you doing here? I thought we told you not to be
the
here.
The Lindsays. What county? What area?
Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm. How fun.
I used to live there.
Or just outside. Delightful.
Really?
Yeah, I went to school there for a while, so...
Did you go,
where'd
Edinburgh
you go? Edinburgh was gorgeous.
University of Edinburgh?
Yeah, I studied there in college.
I think I'll be a little outside of Edinburgh. There's evidently a big golf tournament going on.
Are you
going
to play golf?
There's probably no golf.
I'm not going to play. Not at that tournament. They're not going to let me in.
A nice walk ruined.
It's a good,
beautiful Scottish Lynx course.
Yes, yes. So I'll be in some tent.
So if you do live in Scotland and you do see Alex, just walk up without any introduction to say, you got a lot of damn nerve showing your face here again against what your ancestors did to my ancestors.
After that, exactly. You got a lot of damn nerve. Lindsay.
And then just show a birthmark that say, I am your doom. Claymore is at dawn.
Yes, exactly. My name is McFarlane McVash. And you killed my father. Prepare to die. It'll be a beautiful day. We also thank Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. How's it going with your talk thing? Is that still on? TalkMobile2013.com?
Absolutely. We did social last week, and Leo told us that he did not recommend normal people joining Twitter. So you can go there and listen to that video.
Yes.
And we have the big ones coming up next week. That's the platform, the cross-platform, all the different strengths and weaknesses of hardware and software. And we have Leo on record for that one, too. So it'll be fun to watch.
Fun. TalkMobile2013.com.
I will point out for the coincidental record that Richie... my sept comes from Edinburgh, too. It's part of the McIntosh clan. So Alex can go and insult my ancestors as well.
My grandfather was Gordon Dunlap, and he came from the edge of the river Dunlap, right outside of St. Andrews.
Yes, so. I was
where golf was invented, I might add.
Yes, and mine was Alexander de Lindsay, who fought with William Wallace in the Battle of
Falmouth. Oh, wow. You have a real image.
That's street cred there.
That's how we lost all of our English land.
I think the Dunlaps ran when they saw Wallace coming. All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live. We love it if you do. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video, always available after the fact. At twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and delivered to your system. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over. Mm-hmm.